Good morning. I will call the City Council Budget Briefing meeting together for Tuesday, August 7th, I believe, right? I think this date is wrong on my piece of paper. I think it's August 2nd. It's August 8th. She had Wednesday, August 8th. So Tuesday, August 8th. Welcome, everyone. I'll explain what we're going to do and how we're going to do it in a moment. But let us begin with an invocation and then follow it up with our Pledge of Allegiance. Councilman Thomas will lead us in that. Our invocator this morning is Pastor Gary Brandenburg, who grew up in California and attended Oklahoma State University. Played baseball there, and then he was drafted to the Orioles, Scott Goldstein's favorite team. Played 3 years with them, and Pastor Gary received a Master's of Divinity at Trinity Divinity School in Chicago, and then Doctor of Ministry at Gordon Conwell in Boston. After a brief assignment as a youth pastor, he became a church planter in California, and he was a senior pastor at Grace Community Church for 14 years, and now is the lead pastor at Fellowship Baptist Bible Church in Dallas since 2004. As a board member of Mercy Ships, Gary has spoken all over the world at Pastors Conference, and he has served on the board of directors of the Pine Cove Christian Camps. He and his wife, Jana, have three children and several grandchildren. He's got the privilege of being a granddad. All rise. Thank you. Thank you for being here.
Thank you, Mayor Rice. Thank you. I also want to take the opportunity to thank all of you, both council members and city staff. We pray for you often. We know your job is not an easy job. But I understand you make decisions and can't make everybody happy. I understand that. I disappoint people for a living, not intentionally. So we pray for you often. It's a privilege to pray for you now. Father God, we pause at the beginning of this day, at the beginning of these deliberations, and we ask for what we don't have, and that is your divine guidance, your divine wisdom. Your thoughts are higher than our thoughts. Your ways are higher than our ways. So, Lord, we just we ask for a stepladder. We just need to access. You told us that if we can ask for wisdom, you'll give it to us. And so I pray that for the members of this council and for the members of this staff. And we thank you for what they do. We thank you for our city. We pray, Lord God, you would give your peace, your shalom to this city as we seek it. And in your great name, we pray these things. Amen. Amen.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you, Pastor. I appreciate you coming down. We will begin with our briefings, and we just have one today, the 2017-18 annual budget. Before I give the mic to our city manager, let me suggest how we're going to approach this process, because it's kind of new. There are a couple people that are new, but we've got a new city manager. We've got a new CFO that hasn't been here in the last times. And I think already several of you are pleased with the depth and the breadth of the work that's been shown. We appreciate that work, Mr. Broadnecks, already. Question is coming from ideas to something we can vote on in September and how we best do that. Because at times it gets a little crazy and we head in a lot of different directions. So here's what I'm going to be suggesting we do. Today, we've got the whole day to go over the first cut at this. The intent was to be at the broad level for the city and for us to discuss the big strategic initiatives that we've got and ask Mr. Broad next if there's areas that need to be shifted in a significant manner. When I say significant, if it's you know, over $1 million or something, that starts to get into real money, and we're going to get into the details, but we want to make sure we have those big directions in the right going in the right way. Then next Wednesday is our briefing meeting, and at that briefing meeting, we're going to lay Ms. Broadnex is going to give us detail about each of the six areas, the six strategic areas that are in the budget. And we'll get into a lower and deeper level at this point. At that point, we should have gotten the issues on the table. And it'll be and between that and listening to our citizens, which I think our town hall start tonight, we'll start to be able to start taking action. I'd like the action be taken. Mr. McGue had a thought that since our committees match up to our the strategic areas, that we put our amendments through each of these committees. And I think that's a good idea. So for all committees will be meeting in that next 2 weeks. And so part of that committee time can be people surfacing those amendments. And we'll let the committees then on August 30th report back to the amendments that they want. So at that point, we'll have an organized learning process and then an organized amendment process. From that point forward, we have a couple of weeks to finalize the budget. And if somebody wants an offer amendment that's not through those committees, they can do that. That's our prerogative. But at least everybody will have gotten a chance to go into it in a deep fashion. So committee chairs, I've asked Mr. Broadnex to work with his staff to make sure the agendas are such for your committees that you can spend time on doing those things as well. So today, and then by the way, we've got also two dates in September scheduled if we want and need them, and we're not aligned around amendments, that we'll have other meetings and kind of flesh those things out. So we'll, and then the final adoption, the first reading is the September 6th, I believe, and the final adoption is the 20th. Is that correct? And so by that point, I think we will get to the budget that we need and we'll approve it. With that, I will let Mr. Broadnex kind of give us an overview and get us into the presentation. Ms. Rice will make the presentation, then we'll open up for questions.
Thank you, Mayor. Thank you, members of the City Council. As the Mayor indicated, we are going to today provide a high-level overview of many of the things that are detailed in the budget. You should have received your budget documents on Friday. I'm quite certain that you had an enjoyable time reading not just the budget documents, but obviously the committee-related materials for the earlier in the week committee meetings. So today we're going to give you a run through of the budget and then open it up for questions and any types of additional information that you want to ensure we're ready to respond to at the next full briefing, as well as things that you might want to see in our presentation detailed out a little bit further as we discuss all of the strategic priority areas. So with that, I'm going to turn it over to Mrs. Raich and her team to walk you through the budget. Thank you.
Thank you very much. I want to start by thanking several folks before we get into the meat of the briefing here. The first thank you goes out to the community. This year, we started our budget process with community town halls in March as an opportunity for our new city manager, T.C. Broadnex, to hear from the community, to learn about the community, and for me to do that as well. We heard from many, many different community members, both in person, online, through comment cards, and we took that information to heart. And throughout the budget, you'll see some quotations set off throughout the narrative of the budget. Those are real comments from real citizens in Dallas that we took from those surveys and community comment cards To give you a sense that, yes, we did read every one of those. We took them into consideration, and we wanted you to see some of those things that our community said. My second thank you goes to you, the council, for never being shy with your input and for letting us know what it was that you wanted to see in this budget, what you thought would be helpful, for asking us questions so that we could be prepared and could incorporate your feedback ahead of time. And so hopefully you'll find that we have done that. I'm sure there may be some tweaks, but do appreciate all of your input and participation throughout the process. And then my final thank you of the morning goes to the staff who put the budget together. We have an incredible staff in our Office of Financial Services, changing the name to the Office of Budget in this budget, actually, and want to thank them for their tireless work to put this budget together. I also want to thank the staff in the Express Business Center for doing all of the printing and getting that done, and I want to thank all of the departments for their hard work during this process. You know, it was a big year of change, going to a biennial budget, and looking at things a little bit differently than we had before, having a new CFO, a new city manager, and so appreciate everybody from the community to the council to the staff pitching in, working hard, and making this what it is, which is a budget to put service first. So today I will go over our proposed budget for next year, the planned budget for the following year, review the revenue, expenses, capital, and debt service budgets, review our enterprise fund budgets, and then we'll talk about next steps. As I mentioned, this budget puts service first, and it reflects our commitment to being the kind of city government that says we are here for one reason and one reason only, and that is to serve our community. So our budgets for the next 2 years are between $3.1 and $3.2 billion in each year. We have organized the budget around our six strategic priorities, and I think you know them well by now, but they are public safety, mobility solutions, infrastructure and sustainability, economic and neighborhood vitality, human and social needs, quality of life, and then government performance and financial management. This is a biennial budget, and we've talked quite a bit about what that means, and we'll talk more about what that means. You will be adopting the budget annually. And so this year you will be adopting a one-year set of appropriations. However, we wanted to present a biennial budget to show you that it could be balanced over both years, that we could be sustainable, and that we had put thought into the effect of the decisions we're making today on tomorrow. So we have done that. But anytime between now and next year when you adopt the next annual budget, you'll have an opportunity and we'll have an opportunity to assess the current situation, to make any changes that we need to make before adoption of that second year. Again, we based our priorities on community input and City Council direction. Most services are going to continue over the next 2 years with no significant reductions. And point out that the property tax rate will not increase in the next 2 years in this proposed and planned budget. Of course, council has the ultimate decision-making authority there. We do have some priorities that will be enhanced or increased, and we'll go over those. So in terms of some of the areas that we have addressed through the proposed budget, of course, the police and fire pension, pay, and recruitment issues, EMS, ambulance response capacity, our street condition, maintenance of city buildings. I'd heard a lot in those two areas, streets and maintenance, about the need for PAYGO funding, about the need to find more money within our operating funds rather than relying on bonds. So we're beginning to do that. Substandard structures and illegal land use. We'll talk about the new team in code compliance. Animal services splitting into its own department. Services for those experiencing homelessness. Services for our aging population, library hours, and then access to City Hall. We'll talk about 311 and other means to try and get out into the community. The next slide here shows that our budget shows a budget overview, and you can see, of course, the $3.1 to $3.2 billion planned for the next 2 years. The bulk of it is in that first row, the general fund, in terms of those items that we'll probably spend a lot of our time discussing. But, of course, we do have other funds that we operate and, of course, capital improvements as well. Our revenue comes from many different sources. Of course, general fund revenue comes from property taxes, sales taxes, franchise agreements, charges for our service, other areas. I'll go through those. Enterprise fund revenue comes from customer service charges. So these are business-type operations. You use the service, you pay for what you use, such as water and sanitation. This is an overview of our 2017-18, so the annual budget that we'll be considering. And on the left side, we have the operating budget, which is about $2.6 billion. On the right side, capital, getting close to half a billion. And what I'm going to focus on first in the presentation are the general fund, the general obligation debt service, and the general purpose capital budget fund. So those are all kind of the general pieces. I'll focus on enterprise in the second part of the presentation. So speaking to revenue, property taxes are, of course, our largest source of revenue in the general fund. The property tax revenue for this next year will be about 51% of the general fund. Sales taxes, also a large source of revenue, 24%. And then, as I mentioned, fees and other revenues. Go into more detail on these. In property tax, we are seeing our base values increase. So as I said in the memo that I sent out about our 2017 certified values, we saw a 7.18% growth in our certified property values this year. And so that went from 110 to 118. So the 100.3 that's listed on the chart is 2015-2016. That 118.3 is our proposed budget, and 126.8 is the planned budget for next year, which is about 7.22% growth. So, again, still experiencing strong growth. This year's budget is 7.18. Our planned budget is 7.22% growth. Again, our budgets are balanced. There is no gap in these budgets in the next 2 years and no increase to the city's property tax rate. So as you can see, that tax rate goes to pay both those general revenues I just discussed that are 51% of our general fund, but also our debt service. And so our tax rate is 78.25 cents per $100 in valuation. We also this year, increased the exemption for those over 65 or disabled from $64,000 to $90,000. We'll talk a little bit about that, but it was really an incredible choice for the City Council to make. The exempt values for those in that population went up $1 billion, over 30%. So we are exempting quite a bit more in terms of value for those over 65 and disabled. So that will have a huge impact on our community and those folks that are covered there. This next slide is really something that I think everybody here knows, but I always find it's useful to go over it one more time just to remind ourselves, and that is the typical property tax bill. I know you're curious, too, about the average value for residential property with a homestead exemption in the city of Dallas. It's currently $254,000. Last year, you may recall, it was $240,000. But our typical property tax bill for someone with that average residential value of $254,000, in the city of Dallas, we actually only receive 28.7% of that property tax. More than or almost half of it goes to Dallas ISD and then, of course, to the County Community College District in Parkland. So on that average value of $254,000, the city of Dallas will receive about $1,590. So, again, less than 30% of that tax bill. Now, I will point out that we reference Dallas ISD, but we do overlap four counties and 18 school districts, so your tax bill may differ based on the county and the school district that you are in. Sales tax. As you know, the state has an 8.25% sales tax. They retain most of it. I think Mr. Kleinman pointed that out recently in a meeting. 6.25% for the state of Texas. 1% goes to DART and 1% to the city of Dallas. We're projecting $303.3 million for this next year's annual budget in sales tax. That is an increase of 3.82%. Our 30-year average for sales tax is about 3.55%, so we're still above our 30-year average and seeing strong growth in sales tax. Our 5-year average, though, is 4.64%, so we are seeing the growth, not the, the total value, but the growth begin to soften just a tad on sales tax. This next chart, go back one to the sales tax. So this is just a graphical depiction of what that is, and I wanted to point out that for next year, for our planned budget, we are projecting $314.1 million, which is a 3.54% growth. Going into expenses now for the general fund, this first chart shows our expenses by strategic priority area. And, of course, now we have council committees for each of those strategic priorities, and the budget is organized in those as well. And so I wanted to show you that. The public safety category is 60%. Now, public safety includes just a few more things than just police and fire. It also includes our courts, our jail, our judiciary, the Office of Emergency Management, some security operations, and the city attorney's municipal prosecution. So that's in the public safety category at 60%. The vast majority of that is the police and fire departments. And then, of course, you see mobility at 11% and so on and so forth, economic and neighborhood vitality at 4%, human and social needs at 1%, quality of life at 16%, and then government performance and financial management at 8%. Let's talk about public safety first. Again, 60% of our budget, so it makes sense to talk about it first and to explain what is in that public safety budget. So I mentioned that we are addressing pay, we're addressing pension, we're addressing recruitment challenges. In this budget, we are contributing $151 million next year to the pension fund to save the pension for our first responders. That's been a topic of much discussion over the last year and certainly over the spring as we negotiated with the pension fund and, of course, with the state legislature. And ultimately, the state legislature stepped in. I think my mic stopped. The state legislature stepped in, and we are going to be putting $151 million. Switch. It's not working, right?
It was.
It was. Let's see if this works. Okay. All right. So $151 million for the pension. We're also increasing pay. You adopted the meet and confer pay agreement last fall, and that does have a significant effect. We are putting into this budget $25 million that is related to those meet and confer pay increases. So 151, which is more than we would have put in for pension otherwise, and then $25 million on those pay increases. And so as we talk about are we devoting enough to public safety, the answer in many cases is we absolutely could do more, and as we recruit, we are committed to hiring more folks, and we'll talk a little bit more about recruitment. But we have put significant amounts of money into this budget in public safety. Their budgets are not going down, and so every dollar that we are saving from not meeting our recruitment goals this year, we have put back into public safety in one way or another. We also plan to enhance our technology and bolster staffing for 911 and to improve our ability to respond to crisis. So let's talk a little bit about the public safety recruiting. Let's start with police. The plan for this year in the budget is to recruit 250 police officers, bringing the number of sworn employees in the police department to 3,094. This is, of course, below that authorized number in the budget this year. However, it is an aggressive recruiting goal for 250 officers.
Just a second. Are we on air? Whoever's, because the on-air light went off. Just want to make sure. There it is, back on. Thank you. Get our technical stuff together.
Okay, so let me cover police recruitment. 250 police officers, that will be enough to backfill for all who leave. So it is a steady state over the next year. We anticipate being able to recruit as many as leave. Of course, we are encouraging and hopeful with our new police chief that recruitment will begin to be very successful and maybe even exceed this 250. We're also hopeful that with the pay increases, with settling down on the pension issue, and with our new police chief and our focus on public safety that we will see attrition decline and more officers decide to stay in the city. We're going to continue our squad car replacement program. As the units reach 110,000 miles, we replace them. So that is our commitment to the police department. And we have several efforts to return some sworn uniformed officers to patrol by hiring civilians to conduct functions that don't require police officers, such as some police dispatch positions added to the Fusion Center, some civilians added to risk management for collision investigation, and some security officers added in equipment and building services where police officers are not required. So we can return 12 uniform officers to patrol or investigation in addition to the hiring that we're doing. We're also going to be addressing facilities issues at police facilities. And so we have money in our overall city facility budget for both police and for fire as well. But we have specifically added $500,000 to the budget to address security improvements at police facilities, particularly headquarters. In fire rescue, talking about recruitment, another aggressive recruiting goal in fire recruitment or fire rescue. We're planning to recruit 241 new firefighters this next year, and we believe that we will be able to meet that goal. We've got an aggressive recruiting strategy. Chief Coatney is interested in trying many different things to improve be able to bring on that many people. We have put money into the budget for the Fire Academy to be able to run more classes through the Fire Academy. So we believe that, though aggressive, this is achievable for the fire department. Next year, too, we are going to be adding some emergency ambulance services. We are adding one ambulance full-time with the staffing that is needed for that ambulance, and we are adding overtime for a peak demand rescue unit. So this will be a unit that is run during those periods of time when we have quite a bit of demand on the system. So two different things we're doing in ambulance service. We're also going to continue our replacement of our apparatus and other equipment in fire rescue, including trucks, engines, and ambulances. And we're adding some positions in fire dispatch to effectively manage our increasing call volume, but also begin that priority dispatch process that the chief has spoken about. Moving on to mobility solutions, infrastructure, and sustainability. This is another area where we have placed quite a bit of focus because, again, as you know very well, the number one citizen priority in our citizen survey was infrastructure, and yet it was the area in which people were least satisfied. So in addition to the bond, which certainly we'll talk about tomorrow, but in this budget, with what we do on a cash basis, on a PAYGO basis, we are increasing our budget for streets and alleys by $6 million. That means we'll have approximately $63 million total, and we'll work to have no deterioration in the streets with this budget. We're also adding $2 million to this budget as a leverage for some state and federal funding to replace 30 traffic signals. We are establishing a transportation department to bring focus to that area, to transportation issues in the city, and, of course, to working with our partners on transportation issues. And then we're increasing funds for major maintenance of city facilities to $6.5 million. In the budget that we're currently in this year, FY17, we have a total of $5 million in the budget. We are adding $1.5 million. Again, half of we're adding $1 million that will go sort of towards all facilities, but then that $500,000 specific to those police facility security issues. So our budget, again, this year $5 million, in the proposed budget $6.5 million, and in the second year of the biennial budget, our planned budget, we have $7 million. Along with streets, this is part of our intentional focus on stair-stepping, if you will, some of these really important areas where we need to be making more of an investment with our current tax dollars into infrastructure and into, of course, maintenance and those basic things that we ought to be doing. So we are making a concerted effort over time and will commit to continuing to do that. Economic and neighborhood vitality. An incredibly important area for the city. We hear quite a bit about it. And so in this area, we have funding in to conduct the market value analysis, to assess the city's existing real estate conditions, and provide the basis for a development of a housing strategy and an economic development plan. So we believe that a good economic policy in the city is a good housing policy. And that's what you're going to see occur in this strategic area in this next budget year. We've also got some funding in to integrate the AmeriCorps VISTA program once the grant funding expires, and increasing the total funds available for home repair from $6.7 million to $9 million. That does include grant funding. That is not all general fund. We have put the total budget together because, again, it is more than one source of funding for home repair. Human and social needs. This is an area where we heard a lot from the community, of course, and from you, and really working hard to show our commitment to addressing some of these needs and systemic issues in the city that really are key to securing our future. So in this budget, we're committing $1.6 million for homeless encampment cleanup and hardening or reclamation of those sites where it's appropriate. That is an increase of $1.3 million. We are also providing an increase of $100,000 to provide a total of $200,000 for our anti-panhandling initiative. I know council considered that earlier, and we've determined that in order to put together an effective program, we needed to put more funding into that program. We listened to our Senior Affairs Commission. In fact, in this budget, the Senior Affairs Commission will find that we provided I hesitate to say everything, but I'm almost certain it was everything they requested in their budget request. One of those items was to add $75,000 to the senior dental program, which we have done, now funding a total of $375,000. We've also started our Office of Welcoming Communities and Immigrant Affairs and working to improve advocacy and engagement. That office was staffed completely within our resources, and so it did not include a budget increase for staff. Quality of life. I know this is an area that is near and dear to many, many folks' hearts, and we have worked hard in this area as well to invest in our community and its quality of life. We're creating a standalone, you created already a standalone Dallas Animal Services Department, and you'll see that funded separately for the first time in this budget. So continuing to enhance our service delivery there and address those Boston Consulting Group recommendations. In the next budget year, we'll see the impoundments of loose dogs increase, double that intake, and also with that private funding for spay and neuter operations and that which we are doing, we should see a massive increase over the next 3 years in the number of spay and neuter operations. So look for us to continue to implement those recommendations and continue that through the 2 years of this budget. One thing we've heard quite a bit about is substandard structures and illegal land use cases. And so we are creating in code compliance an intensive case resolution team. They will focus, this team, nine employees, Jack, right? Nine employees will focus exclusively on these substandard cases and illegal land use, and plan to process 1,750 substandard structure cases and a different 1,750 illegal land use cases in the budget year. We anticipate that the demolition docket, meaning the court cases going through the process for demolition of properties, will increase by 100 from 250 to 350. And so in the second year of the budget, we have added a municipal prosecutor in Mr. Casto's shop in the city attorney's office in order to handle that increased docket. So we are planning ahead. Again, we're looking at fiscal sustainability. We don't want to start a program this year that we're not able to sustain or we have a gap for in the following year. This is an example of that. Also, a code is redeploying 8 code inspectors to Neighborhood Plus areas. And then in terms of senior programming at rec centers, again, we heard seniors all over the city asking for more programming, asking for more attention, and on their needs in terms of a place to gather, a place to have some exercise or some social gathering. And so we are providing an increase of $250,000 for our senior programming at recreation centers. And that includes hiring 20 part-time positions to focus on that and to expand that senior programming. Also in quality of life, libraries. very important to many in our community, and we are expanding and extending our hours at 14 libraries from 5 to 6 days a week. What that means is that all of our libraries will now be open either 6 or 7 days a week. We will have 16 libraries open 6 days a week and 13 libraries open 7 days a week. Large investment in English as a second language, incredibly important to many of our efforts. We've talked about it here in Council quite a bit. And it has previously been funded by grants, a $65,000 grant from Atmos. We are now adding on top of that grant money another $147,000 from the general fund, and we anticipate $75,000 in another grant. So we're moving from a budget of $65,000 in the current year to $287,000 for English as a second language. We'll be able to now staff that operation rather than only using volunteers, and we'll be able to expand to 28 locations beyond the current seven, a total of 28 with seven current. Continuing to invest in Fair Park, we have $6.5 million in for Fair Park. That is the amount of money that we added into the budget this year to focus on maintenance and programming at Fair Park. And so in anticipation of whatever may occur in terms of the management of Fair Park, we wanted to make sure that the city was still committing that money. It's been important for Fair Park this year. We anticipate that it will continue to be important and have put that in over both years of the biennial budget. We added $285,000 to the Office of Cultural Affairs budget to ensure that their support for culturally specific arts groups is in compliance with the city's cultural policy. In the current year, they're using some endowment money for that. We've now put it into the general fund budget to ensure that we can do that. Moving on to government performance and financial management. I'm very excited about this 311 proposal that is in the budget to hire four 311 agents, but they will not be in the basement of this building taking phone calls. They will be in two of our centers out in the community at the West Dallas Multipurpose Center and at the Martin Luther King Center. And so we will have those 311 customer service representatives available for walk-in traffic. They'll also answer calls in the time when maybe they're not helping someone in person. So they will be a real full service for our community out in the community. So this is a pilot program at this point, and we will evaluate that and evaluate that service to the community and then consider potentially expanding that if we find that that is a successful model. We also have in the budget funding up to five council district offices, again, to allow council members to be in the community for constituent service activities. We're trying to enhance our partnerships with schools, colleges, universities, and other regional entities and stakeholders, so we've added two positions to do that. We also believe that a good business environment is one that is diverse and offers opportunity for all. We are adding positions in our Minority and Women-Owned Business Enterprise program to bring a more centralized focus to that program, to diversity contracting and small business opportunities. And then launching Dallas 365. I'll talk about that a lot over the next few weeks if you'll let me. I'll spare you some of that now, but I'm very excited about this set of metrics. We have 35 metrics across our six strategic priorities. We will be reporting on those quarterly in our Dallas 365 report. This is where we are accountable to the public. So we talked about that community input at the beginning of the process. Let's talk about accountability here at the end of the process. Are we moving the needle? Are we doing the things we promised we would do with the funding that the public is giving us? That's what Dallas 365 will help us keep an eye on. The City of Dallas works to be an employer of choice. And I am really proud of several of the things that we're doing in the budget to work to maintain or improve our reputation as an employer of choice. We have increased our employee minimum wage to $10.94 to reflect the living wage adjustment. So MIT, Massachusetts Institute of Technology, has a living wage study that they do. They publish. We, in our living wage policy, require contractors to adhere to that. As a city, we ought to put our money where our mouth is and do the right thing. And that's what we have done in this budget, adding almost $700,000 for that in this year to provide that minimum wage to our employees. We're also funding merit increases for civilian employees, an average of 3%. Those will be effective in January of this next year and then in January the following. So in the past, we may have provided those merit increases at any point in the fiscal year, often in November, December. They're slated for January in these two budget years. The living wage increase is slated for October 1st. We're going to be improving our employee and retiree health plan. We've got some new programs that are quite exciting in terms of chronic disease management, and so we're looking forward to implementing those and helping the health of our community of employees and retirees. We're also lowering the family premium by $50. We've talked quite a bit about organizational changes. I won't go into detail, but we wanted to acknowledge that it takes some organizational changes to organize the budget around our six strategic priorities and to bring focus to some of those areas that we felt needed focus. So going back to our expenses and revenues. So here are our expenses once again, laid out by strategic priority. I'd like to overlay our revenues. So you see property tax there, sales tax, franchise, and other overlaid. And as you can tell, and the black lines indicate that, property tax, all of our property tax goes to public safety, and 36% of our sales tax funds public safety. Going on to our general purpose capital and debt budget. So our budget does include capital projects that are supported through tax revenues and pay-as-you-go. Those projects typically include street and alley. We've talked about a little bit of that, flood protection, parks and recreation and facilities. We've talked some about the facilities. So for this next budget year, the budget is $148.5 million for equipment replacement, facility maintenance, and street and alley improvements. Some of that equipment replacement is for what we call our master lease program, which is where we buy fire apparatus, sanitation equipment, public works equipment, and information systems in terms of particularly information systems for squad cars, and that's where we'll be also upgrading some of our 911 facilities. Facilities maintenance we've talked quite a bit about as well in terms of stair-stepping that commitment to facility maintenance and street and alley improvements. Again, we are increasing our budget there. Now, tomorrow you're going to talk about a bond program. If that November 2017 bond program is approved, we will need to amend the budget. This budget does not reflect that bond program because, of course, council has not yet taken action and the citizens have not taken action. However, we are fully prepared in terms of our capacity to implement that bond program. We are ready to begin those projects with commercial paper and issue the debt to retire that commercial paper. So as soon as the voters give their decision, we certainly financially stand ready to do that. Right now we have, or as of September 30th, we'll have $1.6 billion in outstanding principal. Our budget for next year includes almost $230 million for principal and interest payments. And then, again, for that bond program, these are for prior bond programs approved by voters. We are planning two issuances, $300 million this coming November and $105 million in the following November. So getting here to enterprise funds, again, let's go back to that overview of the total budget. The next pieces I'll talk about are enterprise funds, both operating and capital. Dallas Water Utilities, of course, is our largest of these enterprise funds, an absolutely huge system here in the city of Dallas, providing water to our residents, but also on a wholesale basis to surrounding communities. The budget for the next year is $954.3 million. A large chunk of that is operating, $667.5 million. The rest is capital. Of course, with any system like that, it takes quite a bit to maintain that infrastructure and continue to make improvements to that infrastructure for our future, and that is what Dallas Water Utilities is focusing on. The retail revenue increase will be only 1.6% this year. Typical customer will see their fee increase a little over a dollar per month. In sanitation services, also an enterprise fund, they have an operating budget for next year proposed at $102.3 million. They are proposing a fee increase monthly, 86 cents. There are many things that go into sanitation, and I think all of you know from talking with your constituents that it's incredibly important for trash pickup and landfill services to be done effectively, and so Sanitation Services is prepared to do that with this budget. Storm Drainage Management is another enterprise fund that will have a monthly fee increase in the next year, 63 cents a month. This is based on your impervious area, measured impervious data for each parcel of property. So that fee increase is just a typical one and will differ depending on the property. But again, what we're looking to do here is to increase our investment now in flood protection, in storm drainage management, in dredging, erosion control. And that's what this fee increase is going to enable. It's going to enable us to bring more money to invest in those kinds of projects. And so this is not for operating expenses. This is intended to increase that investment in our flood protection and erosion control. So here we are at our timeline, which the mayor and Mr. Brodnax went over earlier. This is now changed. So I appreciate you letting me update this slide, and we'll certainly post that and get it to you. But on August 16th, we will have all of our budget workshop briefings, the truth in taxation, as well as the six strategic priorities. Then we will have a public hearing on the budget on the 23rd. Committees will meet, and on August 30th, we'll hear back from committees about any amendments that they want to bring forward, and then the month of September, we will, of course, work with you to obtain your final decisions on the budget, and by the 20th of September, we will adopt that and adopt the tax rate. All right, so I am open to questions that you may have. I want to offer Mr. Brodnax, is there anything that I did not cover that you think that we should point out about the budget?
No, thank you, Elizabeth. The only other comment I'd add, particularly on the modification to the schedule, it was the intention to do those meetings much further in the process, but obviously we would love to have that conversation and be able to get council what questions or responses to the questions that they have, so we're moving it up. I would ask for some understanding from the council as it relates to the preparation of those presentations. They may trail and may not be able to be mailed out specifically at the same time as the prior four areas, but we'll work to get those to you as soon as possible before that briefing. Thank you, Mayor.
Thank you. Mr. Thomas.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. TC, Elizabeth, Jack, I want to commend you for your hard work on this. I'm sure most of my colleagues will agree that this is it's been a much better process. It's a much better proposed budget than we definitely had the past couple of years, just from the standpoint of a willingness to go out and listen. I had a chance to attend the session that was at the Redbird Mall that TC held, and people very opinionated down there, and I'm sure at many of the others, they were very opinionated, and they didn't bite their tongue and didn't give Mr. Brodnax much of a honeymoon regarding some of these things. Many of them have felt that we as a city have not really addressed in our budget those things that they felt were priorities. And so it appears that outlining these six general principles and then finding, developing the budget around those principles is definitely the way to go. I'm sure we're going to have a couple of rounds, so I'm going to try and be as brief as I can be. You talked about 311, and you may not be able to give me this information. What's the current status on the 311 app? I know I think it was supposed to be going out to the RFP, and we should be getting something in. Where are we at on that?
So someone correct me if I'm wrong, but I do believe that we're looking for award this fall and that we do have funding in our budget for that new app.
Okay. All right. So you said in the poll, do we have a more specific date or anything? Because I'm hearing a lot from some of our constituents about the fact that it's not effective, and the more that we have an ineffective product out there, the more frustration is going to set in with our constituents. So, don't think so.
I think so. Go ahead. No.
So I'll invite Bill Finch, our Chief Information Officer, to address the question. He's getting his mic on.
There we go. The target to launch this is in the April-May timeframe of 2018.
Okay. All right. Thank you very much. In terms of the Transportation Department, establishment of Fisher Transportation Department, have the director already been selected? Is there an internal individual that will be chosen as director for the Transportation Department?
I'd like to ask our Assistant City Manager, Majid Al-Ghafri, to address that question.
Good morning.
Morning, Mayor and Council Members. We're going to be looking at internal staff as well as external candidates for that very important position.
Okay. And then once that, how's that transition, you know, from where we are now to that point? How's that transition going to be? And then also, will that individual work with Chairman Kleinman and the others who own the Transportation Infrastructure Committee?
Absolutely. Some of the functions are going to be transitioned into that new department. There's going to be a greater emphasis on transportation matters, and the city taking a leadership role in looking at DART and looking at NTTA and other partners, as well as working with the community leaders to address transportation matters.
And who's currently fulfilling that responsibility?
Well, it's really managed by committees, and that's the need to create that new transportation department.
So we have a single person who's responsible, right?
Single entity who's right. Going to be responsible.
Okay, very good. Thank you very much. On page 23, under economic and neighborhood vitality, as far as the Vistas, I work pretty close with a number of Vistas because a number of them are engaged in Southern Dallas. When is the grant expected to expire?
It's expected to expire in April of 2018. So we added $57,000 to the budget to cover the rest of that year, and then we added another $136,000 to the second year of the biennial budget to cover these. There are about 26 people in this program.
Okay. All right. And so what are we expecting in terms of dollar amount?
In terms of the total value of in the second year that we'll spend on this?
Right. Well, first year and second year. I mean, I had.
So the first year is $57,000, okay. And the second year is $136,000 additional. So 57 plus 136 in the second year.
Okay. And what's the what accounts for the increase in the second year?
Full year funding, because the grant expires in April, so we only need to fund it for about half a year. So the second year includes a full year of funding.
Okay. All right. Okay. And so I infer that, well, it's another question. This will tie in with my second question. Well, I'll go ahead and ask it. Currently, how many, and I know TC is kind of looking at how Neighborhood Plus is currently set up and whatever changes, if any, are going to be made. How many current Neighborhood Plus areas do we have? I know every council member did not choose one, so that's why I was wondering how many we currently have.
I'd like to ask either Mr. Broadnax or one of our assistant city managers to address the question. Raquel Favela is an assistant, chief.
Mm-hmm. We currently have 11 Neighborhood
11.
Plus.
Okay. Okay. All right. Thank you very much. On the next slide, health and human and social needs. And the committee will be meeting on Thursday at 11:30 a.m. If any council members would like to attend, those are on the committee, please be there at 11:30 so we can start on time. Of course. What is the under the anti-panhandling initiative? I know what initially the idea was, but when we're talking about an increase of 100,000, what are we expecting the program to look, all the initiatives to look like now?
We have one of our chiefs in the back, Nadia Chandler Hardy, who will answer that.
Thank you.
Yeah, please.
We just leave it on. Did I just turn it off?
Run out of time.
Okay. As we look at the anti-panhandling initiative, we also want to ensure that we have resources available to connect individuals who are willing to take us up on that offer to workforce development type services and other human services related needs to stabilize their income.
Okay. And has a specific plan or strategy been developed in terms of individuals who would qualify to participate, you know, what they would actually be doing, you know, what their duties or assignments would be, things of that nature?
So staff from the Office of Community Care are currently looking into that. We're researching our best practices. I believe we are due for a conversation at the committee level sometime in the coming weeks to share some of our thoughts and ideas and recommendations around how we propose a well-rounded program around that.
Okay, so that will be an item addressed by the Human and Social Needs Committee?
Yes, sir.
Okay. All right. You can stay there. One more question. I believe it's going to be some of you announcer. Under the senior dental program, is this service currently being provided through RFP process, or how are we determining who's doing that?
So we currently are partnering with two clinics to provide these services. The additional enhancement for the program will offer an expanded service, service options for seniors who are needing additional cleanings and denture care.
All right. And running short on time, so TC, this one's for you. On page 25, the intensive case resolution team and code compliance, is this similar to what you had included in your proposal that you've done in other cities? I know you said, I think it was a rapid response code compliance team. Is this similar to that?
It is not.
Okay.
This is a particular focus on training. Some of our code enforcement officers do a higher level of service to allow them to focus on these efforts, which take a long time to resolve, which will free up the other code enforcement inspectors to be able to do many of the community-facing kind of things, outdoor storage. We're still working through, and I'm working with the chief of economic development and neighborhood services on really looking at our deployment strategies, and they're doing a few things within this budget, but we'll continue to find a way to grow and figure out how we can isolate some of those high-profile, behind-the-curve kind of things that we can focus on and immediately get after with our teams in coordination with our neighbors. But this is a little different, but similar.
Thank you. In the last few seconds, I'm going to take personal privilege and tell my wife a happy anniversary. Today is our 14th anniversary. And yes, and the new principal of T.W. Brown, so she's administrator in Dallas ISD. Thank you, Mayor.
Congratulations, Mr. Thomas. Ms. Gates.
All right. Thank you, Mayor. I'm going to take my time to kind of start with some overall impression and then finish up with just a few questions. I'd like to start by saying thank both Elizabeth and TC for putting and for Jack and for everybody that worked and Jeanette that worked on this budget and for listening to our citizens and working with us throughout this process. I think it's I'm supportive of the biannual planning. It gives us a good projection and lets us kind of make informed, educated decisions. So thank you for that. I will say my overall reflection is I want to make sure that we continue. My own priorities is that we continue to kind of stay in the municipal service lane and that we always provide the services that we're supposed to be providing first and when we prioritize. And that always being, I think, what rises to the top is public safety. I think you've created a realistic reflection of our reality related to public safety right now because of the the attrition issues we've had, but I don't want that to translate, you know, I'm concerned that that could translate to not being as safe as we need to be. I want to make sure, and we can talk about this later, but that when we brief it in more detail, but that we've, you know, budgeted for enough overtime that you think or that is necessary, and that we also have done enough we can be able to do regarding recruitment. I think we're probably limited with a meet and confer for bonuses or for anything related to direct salaries. I want to make sure that is the case. Because essentially I want to make ensured that we are empowered, our new chief, to do everything possible to be able to rebuild our police force, that we're seeing decreasing numbers. It's essentially, I think, and I think you've alluded to this, that we are, with this budget, we're able to enhance other services and programs because of the unused public safety dollars. Would you disagree that that's what we're not doing that? I want to assure, because when we build back up, because I think it's going to be a priority of all of us to build the force back up, that we're not going to be then just overall enriching the entire budget when we do that because we're adding money to other areas.
Right. So this is a very complex area, but I'll try to make it as simple as it can be. The savings in the salaries from the authorized strength that we have in the budget this year and what we have in the budget for next year is about $39 million. So when you consider that meet and confer is $25 million, when you consider that the increase in the pension budget from last year to this year is $25 million, there's $50 million right away on those two issues that have stayed in public safety. And but also we're adding in fire dispatch, peak demand units, a new ambulance, adding money for the fire academy, a psychologist, some unmarked cars, and we have added police and fire overtime over the budget last year. So in total, we're adding about $55 million in to police and fire. And so we are taking all of those salary savings and reinvesting them in public safety, mostly in pension and meet and confer. The reason that we're able to do other enhancements is because we have other growth in the economy.
Okay.
And I just would say, though, that you are absolutely right that we do need to be careful because in the future, as we do begin to hire those officers, it's possible we could be faced with some tougher decisions. We were able to avoid a tax rate increase or service disruptions this year because
But in the future,
that.
We know we're going to be adding back so that so public safety is going to – because we're utilizing public safety resources where that gap of the salaries is – or we're filling that gap with more public safety services.
Right, but we are absolutely
But we're going to continue going to grow.
And we have money in the budget. If the police department can exceed their recruitment goals, we have money set aside in the second year of the budget to be able to give the police chief that ability to exceed those recruitment goals. We're absolutely committed to public safety.
All right, that's very helpful. I would some other general impressions. Again, I mentioned I like the two-year approach. The 35 performance measurements, I think it's going to be January where we're going to see that evaluated. I did have a question, or if you could let us know, I don't think I'm going to have time for you to answer at this point, but let us know how you came up with those 35 performance measurements. I want to make sure that we are using all the metrics possible to evaluate the new budget process. I applaud the benefits to the seniors with the exemption that the previous Budget and Finance Audit Committee championed, and we got through. I know you had some concerns related to that, but I think we made it all work, and it's to the benefit of our seniors. I do have some concerns over our water, stormwater, and sanitation fees rising that kind of offset some of the savings, but I will be on the record to say I'm supportive that I think they should reflect the actual cost of delivery. So we, in the past, related to stormwater, we've had to use a lot of bond dollars. There is a justification that we're providing that infrastructure with the actual stormwater dollars. So I think that's the way we're moving, but I just think that, you know, in the past, we've done it with another mechanism of bond dollars. And so now if we start moving some of those needs to capital needs related stormwater. It's going to cost our customers more. So I think we need to be explaining that and having a better understanding of what they're being provided with those dollars. I'm also pleased to see that we're taking care of our assets. That's on page 40 of our budget book, and that we're improving technology. I'd like to understand those details a little bit more, where we're where those dollars are going to be spent related to technology. On page 41, the focus on service of delivery. I think you. I would like to know what employees have been under. I thought when we actually had our contractors provide a livable wage that we were doing that in-house. So if you could get me where that's in the past, and you said in your briefing that's $700,000. I had a question about what that would be costing. Some concerns I have are the areas that I think we could make some more savings or cut is I'm not supportive of the mayor and council increase in the budget of $500,000 and then another $1 million for offices in the district. I'm a little challenged on how that would be implemented, and I'm concerned that that's just a ballooning cost going forward. I think we have libraries and rec centers that open their doors for us to meet with our constituents. I know a lot of us use, you know, Panera's and Corner Bakeries and Starbucks to meet. If your goal is to have us have open office hours at these, I know Walnut Hill always, almost, I can't imagine it. Maybe not their big rooms, but they have a conference room that I've been able to use kind of at my discretion when I need to. So I think we could work on that, before we go spend more money on that department. The Office of Community Care, I would like to have a little bit better understanding of, and it's on page 384, the reimbursable, I would like to understand what that, there's an increase in that budget of the community care, what all that and human social needs are provided in that budget increase. And I've had this discussion with TC. We get some federal money, and I want to make sure that when that money, those monies don't run out, then we just don't start absorbing those costs within our general budget or our general fund. And I know that is a concern of his also. On page 38, could you give me the 10? It mentions that we're going to work on 10 underserved communities. Could you give me what those 10 underserved communities are? On page 386, the right-of-way maintenance, that is decreasing, so I want to understand where we're saving there. And I'd like to see a strategy, because the dollar amounts that we're spending on concrete and resurfacing, it's all been adjusted compared to previous budgets, and I'd like to understand what that new street strategy is. I know we've said that we're not going to, streets are not going to degrade, so if I could have a better understanding of that. The new format, I just commend you for that. And then I'm going to give you time to evaluate how successful it is. It's a little bit difficult because we're not comparing apples to apples. And that was kind of what I found out on the street. So I know we're spending money differently, and I'd like to understand how we know that the streets are not going to degrade. So I think this budget also values investment in human capital, and I think in the future that does pay off and it helps us serve. I think we need to recognize that when we do things related to code and we do things related to ESL, then going forward, hopefully we can save some public safety dollars also. So with that, thank you. I know my time's up.
Thank you, Mr. Felder.
Good morning. Elizabeth, I want to say that that was one of the best budget overviews I've ever heard and witnessed. So I want to say thank you to you for that. I'd like to start on page 21 with fire and rescue. First of all, I did a tour of my district, and we went to fire station number 53. And we found ceiling tiles falling from the ceilings. We found paint peeling from the walls. leaks in the roof, so on and so forth. Is there anyone from EBS in the room?
We have Chief Coatney from the fire department and Jody Puckett, who is our assistant city manager.
Okay. So there's Eric. Okay. So, Eric, we brought that to your attention, and so I just want to know where you are with that. Where we brought that to your attention, have you been back out to Station 53 and made those repairs?
That's my understanding that all those repairs are addressed at this point. It's my understanding that all those are addressed.
I didn't hear you.
It's my understanding that they're all addressed at this point.
Okay, because what we have, Eric, is our community is very proactive, and what we have is neighbors that are adopting the fire stations and giving them coffee pots where they have no coffee pots, giving them coffee to go in the coffee pots, and so on and so forth. And so we just, you know, I want to make sure that we take care of our first responders. That's important because they take care of us. They protect us. And so I want to bring that to your attention, make sure that they're at the top of your list. And, you know, follow-up is very important. So please get back to me to make certain that Station 53 and anything else in the fire stations that have a need, they're taken care of. I would appreciate that. let's see. I'd like to move to page 22, last bullet point. Increase funds for major maintenance of city facilities to $6.5 million. Elizabeth, can you go into detail with me on that, please?
Absolutely. So in our current year, this year, we have $4 million budgeted for maintenance of all city facilities, all buildings. And another $1 million specific to cultural facilities because that funding comes through the convention center and through that route. And so that's a total of $5 million. Now, as you know, there are many, 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 many city facilities. And so we have not been investing as much on a PAYGO basis as we have needed to. And that is why our commitment in this budget is to begin that process of stepping up our investment in those city facilities so that we can avoid the deterioration that leads to the need for a bond program or a major replacement. Yes. So in the proposed year for this next year, we have a total of $6.5 million in. So that's an increase of $1.5 million. That's $5 million for all city facilities, and I will tell you that in looking at the potential list of projects that $5 million would go toward, many of those are public safety facilities, fire stations, police facilities as well, and then the rest of city facilities. So $5 million in the next year for all buildings, $1 million for cultural facilities, and then $500,000 that is specific to police security at their facilities. Okay. Particularly at Jack Evans headquarters.
Okay. Thank you. Let's go to page 23, please. This one, I'd like to say thank you to TC. I think you heard me, the last bullet point, increasing the total funds available for home repair from $6.7 million to $9 million. To the listening audience, to the viewing audience, just want to, you know, highlight the fact that I represent District 7, and in District 7, you have a substantial number of people that are disabled, elderly, and poor. The housing stock, the average house in District 7 is over 60 years old. So when you combine elderly, poor, and disabled, we need this money. And so thank you, TC. I think you heard me, and I really appreciate that. Page 24, please. Is there anyone from legal in the room? And streets and code. Come to the microphone, please.
So I think yes, we do. We have the city attorney's office
in
the room.
I need them to come to the microphone,
please.
Yes, we
have Majid Al-Ghafri, our assistant city manager over streets. And we have Chris Sweckert, who is the director of the code compliance department.
Someone illegal as well.
Yes, Chris Caso from the city attorney's office.
First question I have is, I see the picture on the slide here. to me that looks like I-45 bridge encampment. Is that correct? Anyone?
I'm not sure. Chris, do you happen to know that picture location?
That looks like the overpass under I-45.
Okay. The question that I have for legal as well as code, I-45, I believe, is a state highway. And so I want to know, isn't that the state's responsibility underneath that bridge? Wouldn't that be the state's responsibility and not the city's responsibility?
The state has responsibility under the highways. But in the past, what we have done is that we have received a criminal trespass affidavit from the highway department that allowed the city to go in and remove people that were trespassing under there. And so that's how we, in the past, have removed those encampments.
Yes. So here, again, once again, how I think, if that is the responsibility of the state, then I don't know why so much pressure has been put on the city to do the cleanup underneath a state bridge in which we pay sales tax to the state every time we make a purchase. And so I'm asking the staff to get with the state and then also someone who is in intergovernmental affairs to talk to State Representative Eric Johnson, this is his district, as well as State Senator Royce West. We have to take the pressure and we have to take the burden off the city of Dallas and put it where it needs to be under the state. And so that's what I'm asking you all to do. Let's move forward. Page 25, please. Third bullet point. Redeploy 8 code inspectors to neighborhood plus areas. Are any of those areas in District 7?
The deployment will be along the lines of the neighborhood plus areas. So, yes, I do believe there is a neighborhood plus area in District 7.
Okay, thank you. And while you stay there for 1 second, I want to say that when you came to my office, I gave you my commitment to your increase in the budget. I stand with you. One thing I would ask of you and TC, I want to see a variation in shifts because there are things that are happening after 5 o'clock that code needs to address. There are things that are happening on the weekends that code needs to address. So I'm looking for a different shift pattern for code enforcement. I want to see some code officers working till about 10 o'clock at night. I'd like to see some working on the weekend because there's a lot of things that happen after 5 o'clock, especially in District 7. Thank you, sir.
Thank you. You still on?
Yes, sir. Page 34. The bond issuance, the schedule for the bond issuance, we have November 2017, $300 million, and November 2018, $105 million. So can you go over that with me and explain that to me?
Yes, we have bond propositions that voters approved in 2006 and 2012. For which we have not fully expended the money on the projects intended in those bond programs. And so these bond issuances are intended to both retire any commercial paper that has been issued for those projects and get those projects underway if they've not yet been started.
Okay. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Mr. Felder. Mr. Klein, Mr. Atkins.
Thank you, Mayor. TC, great presentation, great recommended budget. Applaud you for doing this. I wish I was here back in March when we first started, but I'm trying to catch up. If we go to page 22, uh, You know, I look at $63 million in streets and alleys deterioration. I guess my question would be someone for streets that, you know, when we talk about streets, alleys, and we talk about different districts, and I keep harping, you know, I guess Mr. Tumbles probably had a district compared to my square miles, 58 square miles, about 1,000 miles of street. When we try to distribute or repair streets in the alley, especially in District 8, you know, and we've got 14 districts trying to compare, you know, how much money to spend on what street, grade A, B, C, D, or E, or F. How are we doing anything different in allocating? I know every council member have a rating on how the street is rated. Could someone tell me that what would be the allocation of the $63 million by district or by condition of street? How is it going to be allocated?
We have Majid Al-Ghafri at the back, Mike.
So it's looking at all of the criteria, including the number of streets in each district, number of miles of streets, as well as the condition of the streets in each district. So that's how they're going to be allocated. Now, in terms of the treatment, most of the funds will be spent on the C streets, which are the streets that are in fair condition, because those are the streets that could be going from good to bad and degrade in such a quick fashion. And that's our biggest amount, or that's the biggest percentage of streets that we have, of about over 60% of that in that category.
Yeah, and by saying that, you know, I have 1,000 miles of streets, and I probably use a whole $63 million. I know I'm not going to get the whole $63 million, but could you at least give me a breakdown, not today, what would be the forecast, how many street miles that would be repairing in District 8?
And we do that. We'll provide that.
Thank you. On page 23, the MVA, I know that we're probably going to have that presented to us sometime in September. Is that correct? Is that correct, the MVA?
That's correct.
Update. Okay, to do that, I just have a couple of concerns. Number one, when we do that and when we discover that there's many different pockets throughout each district, I would love to see how do we prioritize that over, how we do that, because there's not going to be enough money in the bank to address each one of those issues. And I know that it's not going to take overnight to resolve this when we get the MVA report. I did look at San Antonio. I saw some of the projects down there. It took anywhere from 5 to 10 years before you can see the result of that. So I just want to make sure that we do get a great understanding. It's not something that you wake up the next day and we have, you know, all different type of development. It's not going to work that way. So just make sure that we do understand the time-sensitive timeline, how this works. Increase on page 23, the last bullet, home repairs. Are we going to address a foundation? That's my biggest concern, that we do a whole lot of home repairs, but foundation is, I have not seen that we're going to address foundation. Are we going to address foundation? Would that be a policy decision of what we're going to do? What is the status?
So I will say that in this budget, the average cost of a home repair is $75,000. That is significantly up from what we've had in the past. So I'll let Ms. Favela address your question.
Yes. As it relates to federal funds, we can't do foundation repair in isolation. We can do foundation repair as a complete scope of work for rehabilitation to bring the property up to code. And so by increasing the amount that's available for that, that helps significantly. So as you saw in our committee presentation, we are looking at evaluating all of those housing programs, and we're going to bring forward some policy recommendations for the committee and the council to consider to incorporate a more comprehensive rehabilitation program for these properties.
So,
that would include foundation repair.
So my understanding is right now, that if we do address home repair, it would be in a process that we have a job $75,000 in order to address home repair, or do we address it one-on-one? I mean,
right now we don't have foundation repair as an independent system repair.
Right. So my question is, right now, how are we going forward that we try and repair roof, siding, interior, and we need to repair home the foundation? And that's my concern, is that we're going to spend $15,000 to $20,000 on the roof, on the siding, but we know as soon as we do that, we got a bad foundation. So I wish that we can try to figure out how do we address the foundation first before we start fixing roofs and siding.
That's exactly right. That's one of the problems we've identified with our existing program, is that we are spending money doing repairs that don't address all of the problems in the structure, and that is a problem.
So would that be a policy decision?
Yes.
How do we address that?
Yes. So we're, as I said, we're bringing forward full recommendations on revising the housing programs, the home repair programs.
Okay. Page 24, we talk about homeless encampments, and my problem with homeless encampments, I don't care if it's a state or the city. You go J.J. Lemon over off of 20 and J.J. Lemon. You go over off Keys in 67. Even at Camp Wilson in 67, we have this issue. We need to address it. I don't know how we get addressed on a timely, sensitive. It's very timely, sensitive, especially in District 8. And I've been saying this over and over and over, year in and year out. When we close the farmer's market, it kind of moves south. It's still moving south, and it's set there for a year and a half. Over there off of 45, they didn't camp in there for a year and a half, still there. You know, so we need to address this issue. If we're going to grow south and make sure that business is coming towards District 8 or District 4 or District 7 or District 3, we got to address this issue. You know, it's a shame that every time you drive from south going downtown, you see these encampments day in and day out, and they're still there. Page 25, the code inspectors for Neighborhood Plus. With code inspectors, we are going to think out of the box how we address code per district. Is those codes, new codes officer, going to be assigned to a specific district, a specific area? My constituent asked me and said, hey, each code person is a different face every week. We don't know who is our code person, but they rotate. So we need to find out who is going to be a code person to address the neighborhood or the district.
So these inspectors, as I mentioned earlier, will be working in the Neighborhood Plus areas. They will be assigned within our current structure, which is the seven districts, which align with the DPD seven districts. For each of those districts, we have a manager, we have supervisors, and we have staff. Those staff do rotate through into different divisions as we get new personnel and new people around. So there are occasionally new inspectors in areas, but we always take steps to take them to the Neighborhood Association meetings through our neighborhood code reps and introduce the neighborhoods to those new officers.
I got two more questions. I would be brief. Transportation. I guess, TC, I don't know how we address this question, too. The Inland Port with DART, how do we have transportation to those jobs, especially in the Inland Port? So whoever can address that question to tell me, are we working on circulators? Because we have many opportunities for employment in the Inland Port, but they can't get to work. Cameras. We got many trails going up throughout District 8, the Trinity Forest Trail, the Running Spring Trail. We need to address cameras to make sure our trail is safe. And Ms. Winters, what are we doing? We build all these trails, and I had citizens say, yes, we got a great trail, but they're not safe. You know, we cannot get cameras. We don't have lights on these new trails going up. So what is we going to – how are we going to address this?
Well, we're going to have to work with DPD on assigning someone to monitor any video feeds from cameras. So that's the biggest issue, and also bandwidth, addressing that through technology upgrades. So we do have funding. I think we'd like to start with putting cameras at trailhead parking so we can monitor people that are entering and exiting the trail as a first step. But we are going to have to work with technology upgrades and DPD to put together an effective program for security.
Okay. So would that be something that you need to work with DPD? TC, that's something that we need to coordinate with Park Department and DPD, said there is a problem to connect those dots.
Yeah, we'll work to do that. I'll lean on Willis and his team. But I think at the end of the day, beyond bandwidth, more physically and technologically, I think it's an issue of who's going to be reviewing the cameras in real time. And we got those challenges, but we got to work through them. I think we did add cameras in this budget for illegal dumping and some other types of things, but we'll work with the Parks Department.
Well, you know, my concern is trail. We got to see you walking on trails, and that's why I've been addressing. Thank you, Mayor. I probably have a round two.
Thank you. Mr. Kleinman.
Thank you, Mayor, and thank you, Elizabeth, Jack, and Jeanette, for putting together this budget. It's, more clarity is always great. I think over the last couple of years, we've seen good movements in that direction, but this year is definitely the most clear that I think we've seen in a long time. I have a question about the effective tax rate. How much budget savings do we need to roll out the effective tax rate?
So the effective tax rate would be 74.96 cents per $100 in valuation. And to get to that effective tax rate in the next budget year, we would need to reduce our revenue by about $38 million, therefore reduce our expenses by about $38 million.
So we're planning a tax increase of $38 million right now.
We are not increasing the tax rate now.
That's not what I asked.
We're anticipating additional revenue coming in through property valuation increases.
So the city manager is proposing a tax increase of $38 million. Yet you told us we have $39 million in savings from our inability to hire police and fire. Why don't we just pass that savings along to our taxpayers? I mean, they're the ones that are not getting the services. They're the ones that are not getting the fulfilled positions in police and fire. It would seem appropriate that if there's savings of $39 million from not hiring enough people, that the taxpayer shouldn't be paying for stuff they're not getting. Why did we not start our budget with the effective tax rate? Why do we year in and year out bloat this city hall and bloat this budget and add more services and more things and expect our taxpayers to keep paying for it? I'm very frustrated by this. So, Council, I think we ought to be looking deep and hard at this budget and finding that $38 million in cuts so that we cannot raise taxes on our citizens. We just did a very good thing, in my view, which was increase the exemption for seniors to hopefully keep them in their homes. Of course, the exemption didn't even nearly keep up with the inflation since the last time. Nevertheless, I see a bunch of new, like on page 29, a bunch of new services, welcoming communities, immigrant affairs, Office of Homeless Solutions, Office of Community Care, Transportation Department, DAS. I mean, where's the money for this coming from other than just bloating the budget? And I think Ms. Gates made a very good point, which is if we're looking to hire more sworn officers, you know, we're benefiting from the fact, you know, that we had a lot of retirements. But if we're looking to hire more sworn officers to fill those in, then it's just going to bloat the budget more. So what is our target sworn strength?
So our sworn strength in the police department is about 3,600.
Okay, so we've got a new police chief coming in, and we're going to tell her what the appropriate number of officers is. Don't we think we should have the new chief evaluate our department and tell us what the appropriate number of officers is?
So, Councilman, I can appreciate the cart, the horse kind of conversation. The reality is this. One, the police chief, the new police chief, is not here. We're recommending their budget. We're budgeting positions related to police based on our expected attrition and our hiring abilities. there will be an opportunity. That is why the chief is coming, and we're happy about that, to lay out a recruitment and retention plan that we will support. I think the theory that the $39 million could be returned to taxpayers could be. But then there will be quite a few other services, namely just funding the pension, which I think Elizabeth shared with you. That's where the majority of those dollars went, as well as the meet and confer dollars. And so the things that we've got recommended in the budget, quite frankly, are things that we should be doing, should have been doing, and will need to do as a city if, in fact, we want to be a top-tier city. And we're not even close to funding the things at the level that we should be. We spend $30 million on libraries. There's $30 million right there. But, again, I think if we want to talk about the services that the community wants, needs, and that I think are benefiting from, those are the things in this budget. We are at 80% people business, and it costs money to have people do these things. And we will adjust the budget related to police, fire, and any other services that we need to on an annual basis. And I'd say we're going to find a way at 3,600, if that's the sworn strength of our police department, we'll find a way to get there. That's the job of the city manager, to lay out and manage the budget and share with you where he believes, in this case, those dollars should be going, and ensure that we can provide services on a day-to-day basis.
So I'm glad you mentioned the police department pension bailout. How much additional over and above is that?
So over and above what we would have contributed prior to HB 3158, it's about $40 million.
Okay.
On a budget-to-budget basis, it's about $25 million.
Okay.
Because if you recall, last year we budgeted a little bit extra for a potential increase.
So $40 million of an unfunded mandate that came down from the state.
That's
right. And then how much did we have additional for meet and confer in this budget?
In the proposed budget year, it's $25 million is attributable to the meet and confer increases.
Okay, so that's $65 million. What additional services are we getting?
In terms of in the city as a whole, I think we've talked about many of them. We've talked about trying to improve Dallas Animal Services.
No. For the $65 million that we're paying
out,
what are we getting for it?
Well,
are we getting more hours?
I think what we're
getting is... Are we getting more officers? Are we getting more public safety?
Elizabeth, I think that's a rhetorical question in some respects, so you don't need to probably answer that question.
You can answer nothing.
Well, I don't want to answer with nothing, because our hope through meet and confer and through handling the pension situation is that attrition will decline, that we will be able to recruit, we will be able to retain, that we will be able to have those officers here for public safety purposes. So I think that was the intent of council when looking at pay raises and other things, was to become more market competitive.
Right. Well, I mean, giving a 25% increase in meet and confer obviously did not do much for retention, clearly. We lost tons of officers. Having the state force our hand to bail out the pension system, still lost officers. So, I mean, the new chief has a lot of work to do. There's no question. But I think we should quit kidding ourselves and believing that just throwing more money at this problem is going to solve it. Okay, on you touched on it for a minute on slide 14, the sales tax. But I do want to touch on it again. There's $303 million that we're collecting in sales tax for our one penny. But the 6.25% the state is collecting is almost $2 billion. So, you know, we're very challenged in the legislature right now with them trying to tax cap us, which as a fiscal conservative I tend to want to lean towards, but as a representing my community, I wonder what my community wants to do, which is control our own tax destiny. So if you'll give me a soapbox for a minute, they're pulling $2 million out of our community, $2 billion out of our community. It seems like they should be looking at their own budget and not at ours. I think that this council is a good fiscal steward of the money that we collect, and it's just unfortunate that our legislature really wants to spend time trying to manage our city as opposed to manage their own budget. So that was just my little deal. And with that being said, I would like us to go back and evaluate the effective tax rate so we don't have to worry about this tax cap. So I and hopefully with my colleagues will be looking for about $40 million in cuts from this proposed budget so that we can roll out the effective tax rate to our citizens. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Kleinman. Ms. Grayson.
Thank you, Mayor. I just want to start out by saying there is so much to like in this budget, and I congratulate everybody who's worked on it. Things I like, for example, is beefing up the transportation department so that we control our fate instead of just letting DART and COG control our fate, which we've done for years. So I think that's a move in the right direction. Civilian positions at the police department, I've always supported that. I think it's a great idea. Let's free up our officers and get them out on the street and patrol where they are so needed. The extra ambulance and the fire department recommendations, another bouquet to that. I think that is so needed, and I really appreciate Chief Coatney coming in and recognizing that right off the bat. I do have a couple of questions. The security issues at police facilities, mostly the Jack Evans headquarters, I actually thought we were paying for all of that in the bond program. So why is there another $500,000?
We wanted to make sure that we were able to tie up every bit of loose ends in terms of the things that we needed to do. And as we're looking at the costs and that list, we thought that we might need a little bit additional. We didn't want to have to cut any corners there, and so we put the money into the budget. But if we don't need it for those particular projects, we will use it for other police facility projects.
Okay. Because I thought the consultants had come in and given us a price tag for every improvement at each station, including Jack Evans, and that was all covered in the bond program. So I was a little surprised to see the extra money. The other thing is, on page 25, where we're talking about improving our focus on substandard structures and illegal land uses, I also hope that that covers foreclosures, because a problem in my district has been homes that are foreclosed on and they sit there year after year after year and the banks just don't move on them. And so if there's something we could do to get those homes back into the housing stock, there's also usually problems with maintenance with those foreclosed homes. I mean, they stand out on a street. You can drive down the street and you can just see which houses are in foreclosure. It doesn't happen a lot in my district, thank goodness. I appreciate that. But when it does happen, it takes years to resolve those foreclosure cases. So I'd like to see some attention paid to that, too, if we could. I will not be supportive of establishing district council offices, and since I'm the furthest away from City Hall, I use Corner Bakery, and they've gotten a lot of extra business from me having lots of meetings there all the time. But I just don't want to spend extra money beefing up council budget. We put in a couple of extra positions last year. We have constantly increased our council office budget. The amount of money that goes to maintaining the council offices. This is another big expense, $500,000. I'm just not in favor of it. I think our offices look fine the way they are. I don't think we need council district offices. I just feel like we need to show some restraint on our own budget, and that's a good place to start, is to not keep expanding our council office budget. So those would be my comments. Again, good job. I think this is going to be an easier council or an easier budget process. I did want to mention one thing. I did think that Ms. Gates made an excellent point about the fact that we're able to do all of these things because we're saving money on staffing in the police department. And that when we do beef that up, we're going to have to count on new revenues coming in order to continue to pay for all these services that we're putting in. And all of these are greatly needed. All these services are greatly needed. But I do think she made a really good point about the fact that, you know, we're going to have to hope this revenue keeps coming in and our property values go up, because that's how we're going to pay for this in the future. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Grayson. Mr. Kingston.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Ms. Raich, I want to reiterate what I said the other day. This is a different way of being treated as council members. Staff's approach to this budget is head and shoulders above anything we've seen before. So please take the following questions in light of me being generally positive about what you've done. It's, you know, it's our job to come monkey with your budget. We've got it's our job. That's all I can say. Can we look at 22, please? I need some kind of historical examination of what is the level of funding we have to put into streets to get net zero degradation. For the last two budget cycles, I think the mayor and Mr. Griggs were both trying to hold management accountable for zero degradation. That's what we wanted to hold to until we got to the bond package so that we could actually improve streets. And we were ensured in each of the last two budget cycles that that was occurring. I'm right now looking at the briefing that we received on June 3rd, 2016, about what that level is, and it's over $90 million, and I think ultimately we adopted at about $108 million last year. So what's going on here is probably some difference in categorization, but there's no, in the budget you produced for us, Mr. Broadnax, there is no comparison to last year's budget, and that would be very helpful to me. I can go do it, but frankly, I would prefer
we can somebody provide that. We can
better
provide
at
that.
Math would do it.
Right.
Thank you.
It included the larger amount included bonds, mm-hmm. Prior bond issue propositions that had been passed, and so that's where that over $100 million came from. But we can certainly mm-hmm. provide that side by side for you.
It was a weird deal because we initially had an increase to about $70 million, which we were told was the zero degradation number, and then it went up to $108 million the next year, which seems impossible if we had actually achieved zero degradation. I think we probably didn't. And so that's what I'm trying to figure out. Can we look at 25, please? I appreciate the focus on seniors. And I think that it is a good idea to do more senior programming at the rec centers, especially since it's kind of a, we can't really afford to do a wholesale reworking of our senior programming. But this is not going to be successful long-term compared to the expectations of seniors. They do want senior centers. And there is a specific opportunity in Mr. Thomas's district right now at Dallas Executive Airport, which I think could be a much faster solution to get to having a dedicated senior center than trying to, you know, do five super centers all at once, which I think is just completely unaffordable at this point. But keep that in mind. Mr. Thomas is well aware of the project and is very supportive, and so am I. Can we look at 27? I share Ms. Grayson's skepticism about district offices. I don't see anyone on this council slacking off. I see actually a lot of hard workers on this council. And so don't take this the wrong way, colleagues, but I would say that I think it's fair to say that my district is as demanding as any of yours. And we're managing okay with the staffing we have. I'd love to have another staff member. I'm not sure that from a budget perspective that's real bright. And Ms. Grayson uses Corner Bakery. What we do is we schedule we take the staff and basically the whole office out for after-hours walk-up appointment meetings in the district, and we've done that all over the district in the last 2 years. We're going to start that again just so people can get in. Same thing that you're trying to accomplish here, make it a little easier on citizens to get in and see us. But that has worked really well. And there's not – I can tell you that doing that four or five times a year is about the level of demand that you have for walk-ups, for people who don't want to schedule an appointment at City Hall. Can we look at 28? This is great. The MIT calculator that we used is we're using MIT's lowest level of definition of living wage. I'd like to examine the idea that we raise that farther. I'd also like to see the lowest W-2 wage in the city of Dallas for our actual employees and the median. If you can get me those two things, that'd be great. 35. Oh, I wrote down the wrong number. Where's the unexpended bond funding? Here's the point. Thank you. We have a lot of unexpended bond funds. It's more than is being accounted for here, and I'm a little befuddled about that because I thought we tried to work this out after Mr. Griggs asked for a briefing on this. There are a bunch of unexpended bond funds, particularly in Trinity Watershed Management, that are not projects that are under development. In fact, one of them is undergoing an audit right now before it can get started. So we're going to have a discussion tomorrow about a request from Trinity Watershed Management for $75 million more. And colleagues, you can do whatever you want, but I think it is an absolute mistake to give a department $75 million more when they're sitting on more than $250 million of unexpended capital funds. That seems nutty to me. So 37, please. I'm glad to see DWU's increases held down close to the inflation rate. They've been above the inflation rate for the last several years. Sanitation is going to be above the inflation rate. I'm not sure why water and sanitation are strangely inflationary basket goods. I think when you look at every other sector of the economy, you're not seeing inflation rates like this. So I would like to have some more clarity about why these seem to be going up fast. Prices seem to be going up faster than all other prices. So resilience, we ran out of the grant, and now resilience is coming out of the general fund, and it's gone up 50%. Is that about right?
It's about 300,000.
360 in the stuff you gave us. It was 250 last year, I think. Because I think the original grant was a two-year, $500,000 grant. I'm going from memory. I don't understand. Resilience never produced the report it was supposed to with the strategic plan for improving resilience. We've been working on it for 2 years. We spent $500,000 of other people's money. I don't see a strategic plan.
So that plan is scheduled to be completed in October.
Okay.
Yes.
I'll be interested to see it. I don't know why there's an increase in the budget if we're is that an increase in service? Is that an increase in personnel?
The increase is actually somewhat minimal, 325 to 353.
Okay.
And so it's not quite as much of an increase as you might have thought. And usually that is because of the cost of living increases for things like employee benefits and that sort of thing.
Well, we can talk. I assume that we'll be talking about it in October. Let me just say that that causes skepticism for me. This is a grant thing where we specifically said, is this going to ultimately balloon the budget by becoming a general fund obligation? And the answer was no, and now the answer is yes. So I'm not real thrilled with that. The last thing I would say is I think we're going to consider adoption of a manpower study tomorrow for police staffing. I think that's a good idea, especially as the new chief is coming in, to talk about what will be the level of manpower that we deploy. But I think the thing that the message we should send to the officers is that we understand that they're being asked to do an awful lot more than they should be right now, and to the extent we can, within our budget, make their lives easier, I would be interested in seeing ideas for for doing that. Citizens should understand that police are stretched thin and try to, keep that in mind when you're dealing with the police. They need our emotional support in addition to our financial support. Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you. Mr. Caraway.
Thank you, Mayor. And I'm going to try to be a little timely here. I've listened to a lot, and there are a lot of things I want to say, and I'm going to try to get through them. But I wish, with some of the comments that we've heard that's been stated, I wish that, have you all ever seen Trading Places, the movie?
Yeah.
You saw it?
Yeah.
It's a good movie, wasn't it?
Yeah,
it's a pretty good movie. Yeah. I wish this council would just come and let's just trade places for just a little bit. I wish, and I would invite to give up my house to let me come and live in your house, in your community, just one night, just one full day. I challenge any and everybody to let's just trade places. And you come to my house, and I'm going to go to your house. And don't eat now. Just don't eat. Don't eat before you come. So you can be hungry when you get to my house. So when you get to my house, then you can go get you something to eat. Because what you will not find in my community is Panera. You will not find Starbucks. You won't find the corner bakery. And you won't even find a Kroger in Pleasant Grove, Oak Cliff, or South Dallas. And Kroger did pledge not to ever bring a Kroger to our area. Yes, they did. Gary Huddleston. I asked him, what was his 20-year plan for Kroger to come to the southern part of Dallas? And he said there was none. Now, here's the deal. As we talk about some of these things, and you all can have your meetings at Starbucks and Panera and Corner Bakery, we don't have it. Let's be real about this deal. We don't have it. We can't go and have a meeting at Rudy's. It's in and out. You stand up to the window, you drive through. We can't meet at Rudy's. And we can't meet at Wendy's, where Wendy's on Lancaster, the Lancaster Key Shopping Center, only have a drive-thru and won't even let people come in and eat for lunch. Let's just trade places with some of these things. And let's be real. If we're going to represent the citizens of this city, as we represent the citizens in the north, east, west, we also must represent equally in the south. And the south does not have the amenities of many grocery stores and buildings and skyscrapers and opportunities that we do not have in the South. And we're sworn to represent our people, and we're going to represent them. Our folks don't have the opportunity or the luxury to want to come to City Hall without coming to get dressed up, think they got to put on some lipstick and new clothes and a suit just to come down to visit with us. We live in our community, and our communities are closely tied and knitted together. And we are talking about a district office. Well, you all don't have to vote for a district office, but you're not saying anything about Royce West's district office. He's a state senator. You're not saying anything about Eddie Bernice Johnson's district office. She's a congresswoman. You're not saying anything about the state representative's district offices that are all over in our communities. They have district offices. And you're not saying anything about John Wiley Price's district office, and he's the county commissioner. But now, when it comes to us representing and getting an opportunity to be transparent and be accessible to the people that may want to come up on a bicycle, you can't ride no bicycle downtown. This is the most inconvenient from Oak Cliff, let me say safely. Okay, I want to make sure you understand that. This is the most inconvenient building, security-wise, for folks to come to. We're supposed to be inviting. People are supposed to have access to us. They want to come in some flip-flops and shorts to come and tell us about the high weeds and the stray dogs that are still running loose in our community. to come in and talk to us about alleys and concerns that they have without having to have to put on a suit and tie and come down here. Y'all act like that we're just, every time it comes, I'm not, hey, first of all, let me stop. TC, Elizabeth, Jack, Ms. Whedon, and to the staff, you all have done a magnificent job with this budget and this presentation. Myself, Ms. Grayson, and Councilman Atkins, we've heard more briefings than any other council person sitting around this horseshoe. We have gone through them, but this has been the best presentation ever to be presented as a budget for the Dallas City Council. I'll say that, and we say it with experience because we've been there the longest. But now I gave you your thoughts. At the end of the day, I don't want to be just talking about a district office, but I don't really personally don't like the attitudes and some of the comments that are coming across because, number one, it says that we're nobody. When we say what our constituents need and what's convenient for them, then we're talking about the people that we represent. And we want to represent the people fairly, and we want to make it as convenient to them as possible. And but y'all try to make something out of it. Y'all keep trying to make something out. No wonder I got the calls from the press from yesterday. You're talking about leaking in the White House. Hell, it's leaking right around this horseshoe. I don't know who went to the press before we could even get the presentation. So the press be coming to talk to us about our offices. If you don't like it, just don't vote for it. It's as simple as that, but don't punish the entire city. We don't have not one crane in Oak Cliff. And I support Councilman Griggs. He got three cranes or one corner. But none of them are across 35. Not one of them. And all the problems that we have, the no grocery stores, the no economic development, the no contracts, the no consideration about our people that we represent, they don't have Mercedes that they can just gas up and come. I didn't intend to be going on no rant. But I'm tired of this kind of stuff when it comes to the petty things that we need to have. And to the firemen and to the police, no one supports them greater than I do. But there are things that are even greater than just giving all of our support to just police and fire. The sanitation workers got to have some support. The other employees got to have some support. The secretary's got to have some support. And every time a little piece of money come up, we can't just run and go dump it right over here in just one particular pot. We have to spread it. That's our responsibility here, is to spread it so that eventually everything and everybody can be all right. We're never going to turn our backs on our police and fire. They're number one. But we have other responsibilities, and I'm going to say the same thing in public safety. They, too, have to understand that there are other employees in this city, other initiatives, other things that we have to look after as well. Now, it's one thing I will say about the fire department that we're not talking about. The fire department they need another big command unit. We only have one, to my understanding, a command unit, that big truck, where they have a command unit, because if there's a fire in the south and a fire in the north at the same time, east or west, we only have one command unit. That's what they need, is to be able to help and do their jobs better. Now, let me very quickly try to get through with this. Now, we talk about the seniors. I am the one that led the charge for the Marcus Senior Annex to have their own individual, independent senior center. I passed that in North Dallas off of Webb Chapel and Marcus for those seniors. They did not want to be involved with the rec centers and the basketballs because they wanted to do crocheting and clog dancing is what they wanted to do. Mayor, I want to say to you, as relate to the dental that I heard, and I'm trying to speed it up, the dental program, if you went to the mayor's back to school, maybe for our seniors, Mr. TC, we can get the folks that did the dental for the kids to come and help us, assist us with giving and providing dental for the seniors. Maybe they will volunteer and do that as well. The alleys, we got to fix them. Mr. Atkins, I'm glad you mentioned about the foundations. I'm very sincere about that. Mr. Felder, you talked about the Fire Station 53. I hope that they get that repaired. And Eric, the leaks in the ceilings and the walls, I think it should have never got to that point where the ceiling was ever leaking. If we address these facilities while the problem is minute and very small, then we can do the proper upkeep. All right? Now, I think I'm going to stop. I had some more I got to say, but maybe when we get a second round, I'm going to talk about something else because I want to know what the kids are worth and you feel that your teenagers and your kids in your district are actually worth. I want to know how much you think your kids are worth in your district that you represent. I'll talk about that on the second round.
With that, we are going to take a five-minute break, okay, because our presenters have been very good sitting there, and they need 5 minutes, okay? So we'll get back at 11:15, okay?
What time are we?
11:15. We're all day.
We're going all day.
Well, as long as you guys talk. If you... Adam and then you.
Recess at 11:10.
Guys, let's go. I think we've got our form, so.
Many thanks, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you. Mr. Atkins is there, so, okay. Mr. McGew, you've got the mic.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Let me start by saying when you first get a document this size and start reading through it, you start looking for those big ticket items that are important to you and seeing where they're hit. And I'll share the praise that you're hearing from around the horseshoe that a lot of the boxes were getting checked as I went through mentally and then physically trying to go through all of it. So I appreciate the efforts that you put into this. I'll also, I'm not going to just re-ask questions that my colleagues have asked, but also didn't take perfect notes on what all had been asked, so you may get a couple repeats through here. I'll kind of go in order of how it's been presented to me from my constituents. You know, last year we were able to have a slight tax rate decrease, and I would advocate that we, even if we can't get all the way back to the effective rate, that we do try to find additional savings in here and have at least an option to have a tax rate decrease in this budget as well. It was mentioned several times, but...
You say increase or decrease?
Tax rate decrease.
Okay, I just wanted to... It sounded like increase.
Decrease, thank you. on streets, that's the next thing I hear quite a bit about. We've kind of discussed that ad nauseum on this, but I still share some of the questions on where is this zero degradation number and how far are we from there and what steps we need to take to get at least to that point as we all then advocate for the streets in our own districts. Next is public safety, and I have a few questions here that some of them have been asked and answered, so I won't go into all that, but this, you answered earlier, we're looking to recruit 250 officers this year, which is basically the attrition rate. And then you said, well, if we exceed that, we have money in year two to do so. How much money, how is that, what does that look like, and can we, if all of a sudden we start getting, which is certainly our hope, and hopefully find different ways to do it with our new chief and everything else, but if we start getting these numbers met, where does that money come from?
Right. So in year two, we first of all have money in the police department to exceed our attrition. We are planning, we're anticipating about 200 leaving in that year. So kind of getting back down to some more normal attrition numbers.
And what are the assumptions we base that on?
The police department sort of has worked through what they know about in terms of the age and retirement intentions of folks on the force and also historical trends. so, which of course have been out of trend the last few years, and so they're looking at getting closer to trend and hiring 250. So actually already in the budget we are expecting to exceed attrition by 50 officers and actually increase the size of the force to 3144 at the end of the second year of the biennial budget. And then we have a reserve in the budget of several million dollars that we are holding aside in case we're able to exceed that hiring next year, or if attrition doesn't materialize, which we would be thrilled about if we didn't have that much attrition. So to the extent that we can do better than ending the year at 3144, we do have a reserve in place.
And when you say reserve, is that talking about our overall city reserve or reserve specifically for officers?
Specifically for officers. It's about $3 million in that second year. And so that is a sizable number of officers when you think about the cost per police officer. And so we certainly could exceed those recruitment numbers and be fine. And then the other thing I would say is, you know, if we really find that we're able to stem that attrition and exceed those numbers even this year, we will work to move things around and work with council to figure out how we could fund that.
Okay. And, you know, I heard the explanation that we budgeted based on the expected attrition and our hiring abilities, which is extremely realistic, but it's also concerning because we're not saying we're basing our budget on our needs. And the public safety needs was not included in that description. And so, you know, I hear Councilman Adkins talking about the trails, trail safety, as we're expanding those and connecting our trails. That's certainly a need, whether it's cameras or bodies. We talk about some of our other park needs. We've had discussions at this at quality of life, I believe, on trail and park rangers, and even letting those park rangers be officers. Has there been any further discussion or anything in this budget to address public safety at our parks in form of those rangers?
Willis Winters is making his way to the mic.
Councilman, there was no proposal in the budget to shift from park rangers to certified police officers. So just staying with the ranger program for the time as it is now.
So as it relates to public safety in our parks and trail system, we're still dependent on BPD at the current levels and whatever.
Yes, sir. Correct.
Okay. I mean that's a concern I share on that area. I looked through the document, the budget briefing, and on page 146, we talk about overtime, and the number is $1.5 million there. Help me understand where we are on actual budgeting overtime based on last year's usage, the previous year usage, which was it's been incredibly high, and where this $1.5 million fits into the overall use of overtime for police and fire.
Right. So for police, the current year, the one we're in right now, the budget was a little over $16 million for overtime. And so in the proposed, we have about $21 million in for overtime. In fire, the budget for the current year was about $7.3 million for overtime. And in the budget we are proposing for next year, it is $11.2. So we do have quite a bit more overtime for both police and fire in the budget. Now, you speak to usage, and that is true that we have used quite a bit in the current year because of salary savings. And so as we're able to stabilize that and have, you know, sort of some look at what that looks like over the next year, we thought we needed to increase the budget for overtime.
Okay, and we're obviously heavily reliant upon that. It looks like we're going to continue to be reliant on that with our numbers and whatever the new chief comes in and says. But when it goes into a budget for overtime, can it only be used for overtime or can it be used for some of the other needs as we talk about either the quality of life and or the additional security issues at the police and fire stations?
So the appropriation is at the department level, and so we certainly can work to understand what the other needs are. I will say that, you know, from a management perspective, we try to make sure that we don't take any money that's intended for overtime and, for instance, buy supplies. You know, so we do try to control that, but to the extent we have other needs, we work through, you know, what we need to do with the total appropriation for the department.
Okay, and this really just more of a comment on that. I've been told over the last 2+ years that we're at public safety crisis at less than 3,000 officers, and this budget just gets us to 3,094, assuming that our assumptions and everything else are right. We put some additional money into recruiting. Is there any other area to address, or how else can we address the recruiting and that need as it relates to those funds?
Do you want to address? So I'll start, and then I'm sure you may want to jump in. I would say that there are a few things in addition to recruiting that we are working to do, and that is to ensure that those functions which can and should be performed by a civilian so that we can have patrol officers back on patrol or investigators back investigating, we are working to fund those civilian positions so that we can maximize the effectiveness of the public safety workforce. And I would also say that we're looking into, in terms of a long-range vision on IT, what are those types of things we need to be doing in these departments, of course, citywide as well, to make sure that we have the best and most efficient use of our resources. And so there's a lot that we're doing. I would never peg any one particular number as being the required number, but I would say that, you know, it's really a question for Mr. Broadnax, for the new chief, to really wrestle with, and I think that's why you've got on your agenda a study to take a look at what are some of the most effective ways to manage public safety staffing.
Okay. Very good. All right. Okay, I would just suggest there's probably other ways we can look at that. I know it's been brought up, too, of using retired officers and having some kind of program for them to come back. There's no specific line item for that. That just comes out of other public safety fund if we were to do something like that.
We're still discussing what that might look like, but yes, at this point, it's not a discrete item in the budget.
Okay. In the remaining time, I'll just kind of go through quickly. I understand there's another $100,000 for panhandling in there, but panhandling has continued to be a huge source of problems for my neighbors, and especially along the I-635 corridor. We've been getting a number of emails and folks that are advocating a lot, and I'm eventually just going to say start sending emails to the rest of my colleagues, too, because I hear you. We're not having much impact there. The welcoming communities, I know I didn't see any money in there for that, for additional services or anything else in that regard. It's just really taking savings from this past year, as I understand it. But as it relates to the refugee numbers, both in, I know in Vickery Meadow and in my area at Forest Aldelia, our numbers are just continuing to be huge, and we're not really providing them much help. And so that's one area where I'm feeling the pain there. Out of time, I'd love to, maybe it's another discussion we can have at a different time. Neighborhood Plus, these code officers, I'm not sure what the strategy is there yet, and so I'd like to know more to understand that. And then maybe one last question. As it relates to innovation and smart cities, there's a number of I've been working with smart cities and the Dallas Innovation Alliance. There's a number of cost-saving things we can do with different entities that are willing to come in and help reduce some savings there that I think we could use. But what are we doing with in the area of innovation? I know we funded a chief innovation officer in that position, and looking at how we are as a city going to continue to look at next steps. What are we doing there, and where is that budget going?
I think we have continued funding for some initiatives like that, and also have some money to think about, is there a vision for the city or some broader strategic planning effort that we need to do? We have a good start with our 6 strategic priority areas, but there may be some broader visioning that we need to do. So we've certainly taken that into account in the budget.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you, Mr. Clayton.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I'll tag in on what Adam was asking a moment ago, because I had the same question regarding the code compliance officers in the Neighborhood Plus. And forgive me, I lost the slide that was on. But so we're hiring 8, is that right?
Yes, and so that is now spending general fund money on that. It's a redirection, and it was previously funded elsewhere.
If that was previously, those inspectors were assigned to the NIP areas, the Neighborhood Investment Program. That was CDBG money. That money went away. So these are simply moving those inspectors into the general fund. We're sending them to the districts, but they're in a focused neighborhood.
Okay. So I know we have 11 right now, neighborhood plus areas, but we only have 8.
Correct.
Are they just going to rotate through the 11?
Yes.
Okay, got it. So it's not going to be just eight districts get it, 3 don't.
No, keep in mind, yes, 7 districts. When I say assigned to the districts, I'm talking about they'll be assigned to the 7 code districts. The neighborhood plus areas within those districts will be where those inspectors work.
Got it. Also, on slide 27, you had a in there about regional partnerships. I think that was where it was. To collaborate with DISD and colleges and schools. What is that?
So we have renamed the Office of Intergovernmental Affairs to Office of Strategic Partnerships. Sorry, Intergovernmental Services to Office of Strategic Partnerships in this budget, and we're adding 2 positions for external relations, and so they would be working to coordinate all of the city's efforts. It is not as if there wouldn't be other city departments involved when the expertise is needed, for instance, pensions and things like that. We certainly would stay involved, but when there are other kinds of organizations and boards around the region, school, transportation, et cetera, this group would be coordinating the city's relationship there to try to strengthen and improve that.
I don't get it.
So I'd like to ask our Chief of Staff, Kim Beezer-Tolbert, to address the question.
Thank you very much. I don't know if it's morning or afternoon, but thank you, Councilmember Clayton. We are working to really create synergy around the various entities that we currently work with. They're pretty much spread across departments, and so this is referred to where we will have centralized point of contact within our renamed Office of Strategic Partnerships that give us an opportunity to work more collaboratively together. What we want to be able to do is to create value in those existing partnerships and relationships and actually have the staff resources to support those relationships. And so this is just our effort to continue building upon those relationships that we have in place, identify new relationships that we need to bring to the table, and that we're actually leading in those efforts across the city.
So
does that help?
Ish. So it's a PR job, right? I mean, basically it's going to DISD and saying, how can we work together? I mean, we can talk offline about it, but that was one that kind of stuck out that I didn't think we necessarily need to go there. And the other, since we're on the slide, I echo what a number of people, Ms. Grace and Ms. Gates, said about the $1 million going to the district. I appreciate, TC, you explaining to me kind of where your head's at on, hey, getting into the neighborhood. I also appreciate what Mr. Carraway's saying about every district's different. And by the way, if he wants to trade houses, we are totally doing that. You get to get my kids for the night, so it'll be great. If we're going to do that, and it's the will of the council, one thing that I might ask Mr. Rodnex that we do is, and Mr. Carraway said it, one size does not fit all. Your district is far different than my district. In your district, getting people gussied up to come to City Hall is more of a challenge than, say, in mine. But in mine, people don't want to call 311. They want to make glory of their 311. So maybe if we're going to do that, I would rather – if it's the will of council, I would rather have another person who can answer incoming calls in the council offices than pay rent in the district. So I'd like you to at least think about that. Mr. Kingston asked a really good question that I didn't catch earlier about erosion control. On upping the fee for stormwater, I know one of the things in the bond, we were trying to get more real time as far as not having to wait on the bond to do pump stations, et cetera. That is what that slide was, correct?
Yes, and so what it would enable us to do is to have, I think it's $5 million a year, yes, to be able to fund these projects that we need to do on a continuing basis for stormwater and flood protection and erosion control. So we would not need to do everything in the bond. I'm not saying that amount of money every year will cover everything, but, we need to begin to invest as we go.
Well, I guess the reason I wanted to follow up on his question is, you know, I have huge issues about erosion, as I'm sure we all do, anybody who has a lot of creeks in their district. But I wanted to follow up because I just didn't hear the answer to his question. What is it that we have sitting in capital in there right now? Could that not be used? Because I'm leery of doing a rate increase on our, if I understood it correctly, I'm leery of doing a rate increase if we already have money in the savings account. Wouldn't we want to exhaust that down to a more manageable level before we go in and up our fee on our citizens? Maybe Jody can.
Yes, let's have Ms. Puckett speak.
I'm Jody Puckett, interim assistant city manager. I'll give a swing at your question. So the rate increase is a pay-as-you-go capital investment, in essence, in drainage and erosion improvement. So I have a list of different projects here throughout the city associated with that, as well as design projects. And historically, we've used the bond program to do that work, or deferred maintenance like you've seen in streets, for example. In the bond program, I think that Mr. Kingston mentioned $200 million, and that's the Mills Peak relief project, the tunnel project that is out for bid currently. And we do have an agreed-upon scope for an attestation audit with the city auditor. And so I think the city auditor sent that scope out just recently. So that's where the bulk of that money is that's left over from the previous bond program.
Okay, so it's not fee money that's sitting there. It was bond money because we rebid the Mill Creek.
Correct.
Got it. Thank you. Mm-hmm. I know – I didn't see it. I know the Center for Performance Excellence, did we increase the budget on that, or what are we doing on that? I couldn't
really
find it in the
– staying just about the same. We did move three staff members out of the Center for Performance Excellence and into what is now going to be the Office of Budget. Those are the folks who do our performance metrics, our Dallas 365, or will be doing all of that. And so the numbers, but other than that, it's pretty much level.
One thing that I think came out of that program is to your point about doing more accountability in our budget office. So I think that's great. So I'd like to, if not this year, moving forward, to take a closer look at that, because I think anything we can do for staff development that's making people feel empowered, we absolutely need to do. But now that we kind of subrogated out to that CPE, what we're now doing in-house, I don't know if moving forward we're going to have to – we may need to trim that a little bit and make it more efficient.
I missed one thing. I know you've got time. We also moved the internal control group in. So you'll see kind of a decrease for what moved out and an increase for what moved in. But we can have more discussions.
Gotcha. And just last question, kind of a smaller one. I noticed that we allocate $625,000 for legal counsel out to DFW. Would that not be under our aviation fund, or did I just misread that? Because right now it's under our legal department. I would think if we're aviation's an enterprise fund, that wouldn't be in the general fund.
I don't know if our city attorney's office wants to address the DFW legal fees. I believe we have revenue that comes in to pay for them.
Councilman, it's my understanding it's not part of your general revenue budget. The expenses of counsel that serve at DFW are paid by DFW Airport.
So it does not come out of the general fund?
So we get a reimbursement from DFW for the cost of what we provide.
I just misread that, and since we're talking about enterprise funds, I wanted to make sure that – okay, great. Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you, Mr. Clayton. Mr. Callahan.
Thank you, Mayor. The excellent presentation, Elizabeth, Jack, TC, and particularly like the narrative addition of the budget as opposed to just simply raw figures. You know, I think narratively it tells a little bit better story. Are there ample funds in the budget for police and fire overtime pay at this time based on the recent past?
We believe that there are.
Okay.
We'll certainly monitor that.
And I'm certainly, like others, you know, concerned with the fund transfer for reduction in force and all that will be very costly to ramp back up, you know, whenever we grow the force back. And so, and I'm particularly concerned with the reduction in force in my part of town. And I'm a little bit dubious as to whether or not we have actually enough people to cover the bases, but I know we're there's certainly a yeoman's effort going on to try to do that, but hopefully we can utilize the overtime until we can do a little bit better. TC, I'd like to get a strategic plan together 1, 3, 5 years on how we're going to ramp that back up and what those ingredients are. So that's very, very important. We need to use just globally to try to recruit laterally officers as well as, consider bringing reserve, the retired officers back, also utilizing reserve officers and also a dynamic recruiting program to fill the academy back up. Hopefully now that our morale is a little bit better restored since our meet and confer agreement as well as the pension fix, I think we're moving in the right direction, certainly hiring a new police chief, but we certainly want to give her every benefit of the doubt to try to turn things around so it's not a burden on her. I am concerned, like others, with the higher cost of water delivery. It seems like every year it just inches up, and this particularly hurts a lot of the people that I represent, which are on either limited or on a fixed income. Many of the people I represent are just Social Security only, so that is always a challenge. Especially in the last few years, Social Security has not given much of a cost of living adjustment, so there's just really not much extra money after they pay meds and utilities and food. I do like the motto of TC, service first. That's why we're here. If we can't do that, we don't need to be here. So I think that's great. It's real simple. And I also want to compliment the city employees that donated $166,000 to charity. I just think that that's outstanding. Love to see more of that. That's part of that service first and that give back mentality because that's what we're here to do, to help make people's lives better. I like the changes also being made in the code department. It's really a new, fresh strategy, and I appreciate those think-outside-the-box ideas. I think this budget does do a solid job in answering the needs of the city, and it is hard to get your mind around that when you've only had a few days. The things that I'm seeing and looking as I read the narrative and look at the numbers and just the general strategy, I think it really does goes a long way to doing that. The $60 million in additional revenue, what a blessing. I didn't see that coming at the first of the year. I was praying that we'd get $35 or $40 million. In the last 3 years, we've been extremely lucky, but, that won't always continue. There'll be those down years, and so the rainy day will come, and then hopefully we'll be able to deal with that when that does happen. Let's see. The budget includes, the $1.6 million increase, for the homeless situation, $1.3 million for homeless encampment cleanup, $200,000 increase, of which $100,000 is for anti-panhandling initiative. I think that's great. We just can't allow that, TC, as I've told you, and that was one of the things I spoke with Chief Renee Hall about. That is just really very debilitating for our community. It's such a discouragement, and many of the people, the elderly people, they've gone on over to Mesquite and other suburban areas to shop because they just don't want to have that encounter with the vagrants at the doorway and certainly also panhandlers out into the intersection. Again, I've mentioned our folks are on limited or fixed incomes. Last thing they need to be doing is handing over their money to panhandlers and vagrants. They need that money for themselves. But they feel a little bit intimidated, so I want to continue to move forward to try to do a better job of eliminating that problem or reducing it. I think that's about all we have, but I will say in closing, Councilman Carraway, you got Rudy's chicken, man. That goes a long way, I don't know if I have a Rudy's chicken. Maybe I need to recruit to get a Rudy's chicken, my part of it.
Thank you, Ms. Callahan. Second round, and looks like we're doing better here. So, Ms. Carraway, just okay, so we got the Mr. Felder, was second round. Mr. Thomas, second round. Mr. Carraway, second round. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. thank you, Mayor. I just wanted to talk briefly about the comments that were made with regard to what's needed and what's not needed in the certain districts. Can I have the code enforcement director come to the microphone, please? When you talk about what's needed and what's not needed, I think statistics and facts speak for themselves. Chris, would you tell us how many code compliance complaints you receive in District 7 per year?
So far in fiscal year 16-17, year to date, for District 7, we've received approximately 49,000.
And where would that rank among all of the 14 districts?
That's first.
Okay. So you would say that, and you're asking for an increase in your budget based upon that?
Yes, sir. We're asking for more inspectors, and we allocate inspectors based on, in part, on service request numbers.
Yes.
And those are service requests that are either called in or entered on the Internet from citizens, as well as proactively created by our inspectors.
Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Mr. Winters, would you come to the microphone, please? Would you tell the council how many parks are in District 7?
There are 39 parks in Council District 7.
How many parks are in District 13?
I do not know. I'm afraid I gave you the only copy of the
statistics. There are 22. And in District 12, there's 17. In District 7, there's 2,352 park acres. So, are you requesting an increase in your budget for parks and recreation?
Our budget is going up slightly for new O&M for new projects, for senior enhancement of our senior division, $250,000. So a few enhancements like that.
Okay. So District 7 ranks number 3 in parks in the city of Dallas.
Yes, sir, it does.
Okay. Thank you, sir. Is the police chief in the room?
Chief Hughes is not. He's at a retirement party.
That's fine. Can you talk about the number of 911 calls that you receive in the city of Dallas and where District 7 would rank there?
I'm not sure about District 7, but I know we receive in excess of 2 million 911 calls a year.
2 million, okay. And would you say most of those calls come from the north or come from the south?
I don't have those metrics, but we can get them for you.
Do you have a general idea?
No, sir.
Thank you, sir. The point I'm trying to make is that there is a need for a district office in District 7 and in the southern sector. I'm hearing the opposition to the district offices. The need is there based upon the statistics and the testimony you just heard. To the extent that I don't have a Panera Bread in my district. I don't have a Starbucks in my district. I don't have a corner bakery in my district. I would invite any of the people that are opposed to having a district office. Once again, I said this at the beginning of my first council meeting. Please come on a tour with me of District 7. I want to show you what it's like. Let's take Joppy, for instance. Joppy is a small community at the southern tip of my district. They have to go 10 miles to get to a grocery store. Ask yourself how far you have to go to your grocery store. There are no schools in Joppy, no elementary school, no middle school, no high school. How far do you have to go to see a elementary school, middle school, or high school? Equity is not the same as equality. We need a district office in the southern sector, especially in District 7. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Felder. Mr. Thomas.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. We can bring up slide, page 27. Okay. Under point number one, hire four additional 311 custom service agents to work in locations in the community. I can definitely see the value in this. My question would be, what will the role be? Will they do more than input SRs as individuals are coming in saying this is what's going on, or if someone calls, what will their role be?
We have our director of 311, Margaret Wright, here to answer that question.
Yes, sir. The point of having the agents in the community centers is to engage customers on a walk-in basis. But the other aspect of that is if they don't have a walk-in customer, they'll be taking incoming calls just like our agents here in City Hall do.
Right. So my question is, other than inputting SRs, because, you know, I know that's what a lot of the 311 operators do, what will they do beyond that by being physically in the district?
Well, approximately 50% of our incoming calls in 311 are for information about city services, not just service request intake.
Okay.
So information and water bill information. So they'll be able to have that face-to-face dialogue with a customer about perhaps how to solve a problem, what kind of services are available, where they could find them.
You know, I'm glad you shared that information because from a councilman perspective, most of, you know, interactions with our assistants are service requests. And so it's important to know that some of the calls are more than just individuals who have high weeds or junk motor vehicle or those type of things. That's important to know. One of the things that I was hoping to hear is that by having someone who works for 311 present, something that we saw that's been effective with Neighborhood Plus is having cross-department conversations and interactions, whereas it's not a situation to where you have the silo. It's one of the problems that we've had for a long time. And so hopefully that person will also be able to assist in terms of getting information or getting constituent concerns from one department to another. So thank you for that information. I need a little bit more information in terms of, because I had a question similar to Councilman Clayton in terms of the positions to enhance partnerships. And Kim, I know you kind of touched on it, but what do you see? How do you see these individuals being more effective than what we currently have now? You see what I'm saying? What value added will these positions or these individuals serve as in regard to partnerships with these entities?
Thank you, Councilman Thomas. What we're hoping to achieve with the new external function and actually embedding that within the what we've called previously the Intergovernmental Services Department is that we would create this Office of Strategic Partnerships. This will allow a more centralized, focused individual versus it being done across multiple departments and then there's no coordination between those departments. So what we're hoping to do is to really kind of expand on our current process that we use. Right now you've got to go touch a department to find out who's working on what with what entity, whether it's DISD, whether it's the Tollway Authority, whether it's DFW Airport. So there are multiple entities that we currently work with. So this is to give us a better coordinated effort.
So, for instance, if this individual is kind of a liaison between the city and Dallas ISD in particular, would this individual be responsible for maybe briefing the Joint Task Committee on Education on what's going on?
On multiple initiatives, not just those initiatives where we're working with the school district. And, of course, we want to be able to expand our relationship to the other school districts as well, which will include Richardson ISD. Yes. So this would again give us that kind of that coordinated effort till we have a centralized point of contact to where we can build some consistency across our message, what we're doing, and just from an engagement standpoint overall.
Okay. All right. Thanks, Kim. And regarding senior programming and things of that nature, and I shared this with TC when we met one-on-one, I'll be brief. I'm out of time, but I'll be real brief on this. Let's be mindful of individuals who we hire. It's not just someone who has experience in terms of with Park and Rec and someone who's done youth services. Make sure, you know, these individuals have experience with programming specifically for seniors, you know, not someone who's just going to put a checkerboard out because this is what we believe seniors are interested in, or croquet, as Mayor Pro Tem Carraway talked about. But we want to make sure that we know what the needs and the desires of the seniors are. We have individuals who are trained and experienced in providing those services. Thanks, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you. All right. I know it's noon here, but there's only two other speakers that are signed up, and I'm going to power through it, and hopefully we'll be finished, and then we can Mr. Callahan wants to say something. Is it okay? Maybe we should – who all wants to say something besides those three? Okay. We'll go ahead and power through it, and then I'll close with some comments. Mr. Carraway.
Thank you, Mayor, and this is the other Mayor Pro Tem Carraway showing up. You know, I want to ask you all how each council member, how important are the youth in your district? Are the youth in your district, the teenagers, the babies in your district, how important are they to you as a council person? We have the Youth Commission, and I'm pleased to represent the city with the Youth Commission. In fact, we meet this evening at 6 o'clock. Now, in the past year, the Youth Commission has participated in a variety of important projects to the youth of this city and built their leadership skills and giving back to the Dallas community through their service and programming. Now, they are the junior city council. The Youth Commission, they're the ones in your district that you appoint to represent your needs and their needs. They're the ones that talk to the teenagers and the youth in place of us. We're always looking out for our seniors and everybody else, but we must understand that the Youth Commission, they are the junior city council. They're talking to folks that we do not talk to. They're the pulse of the community that can tell us what's on these kids' minds and what we ought to be doing. In the past, I know that the Youth Commission has been meeting and meeting just among themselves to have a meeting, but it needs to go beyond the point of them just discussing stuff and not taking it outside of the city hall walls and doing things within your district. What we need to do, last year the council, Mr. City Manager and Mayor and council members, they were funded $25,000. Now, trying to fund, having $25,000 in the Youth Commission, they did travel to Washington. They did travel to Pittsburgh as well. You can't fly 15 kids plus supervisors and chaperones to Washington, D.C. for the for the convention, the National League of Cities Conference. Plus this year and moving forward, it is their intention, it's on their agenda, to bring together all of the youth from the region. We talk about the region, but there are other youth councils. That's the only way that we're going to know what's on these kids' mind. That's the only way that we're going to know that there's a problem is the fact that we have a liaison representing us, but they need to have the dollars in order for us to be able to facilitate that on their behalf. The only thing I'm asking you to do to the city manager and to the mayor, but to each council member, with your discretionary funds or whatever it is, I'm looking for $10,000 from each council member to invest into their district youth, into the district of District 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, and 14, and the mayor as well representing the entire district. Put up for your youth
to be represented in your district. I'm asking the city manager to find a way. I'm asking the mayor to help find a way. It can be private funded. I'm asking for the city council members to get with the city manager and the mayor and identify people within your district that are concerned about your youth and all of the youth of the city of Dallas. If we do not put in, do not expect to get nothing out. We don't want them to just be meeting to meet and to have a discussion within the walls of City Hall. We want to have productive and produce productive citizens. Now to each council member, you must, and I will be looking for your appointment in the city secretary's office by, well, you really need to be by tomorrow, but by next week. Now, some of you never did ever appoint a commissioner for the youth commission. And we have about four vacancies on there that need to be filled, and I'm expecting for you to fill them immediately. And do not appoint a senior because it is a two-year term, and you need to appoint a sophomore or a junior so that they can fulfill the term limit of 2 years. So a senior would have to roll off, so do not appoint a senior. That's my request to you, and we need to have these appointments. Now, we're going to meet this afternoon at 6 o'clock. I encourage you all to get involved with your youth in your district. Let's find the money and give me a report as soon as we can. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Carraway. Mr. Atkins.
Thank you, Mayor. A couple of questions on Quarters of Life. We said that we're going to provide $735,000 increase the senior program by $250,000 in rec centers. Could you tell me, I have five rec centers in District 8, so how is that going to be divided up with programming?
We have senior programming for all 43 rec centers, so the $250,000 funds 20 full-time positions that we currently don't have. They will be distributed evenly throughout all 43 rec centers, and that will bring in approximately over 10,000 additional hours of senior programming. That will be divided fairly evenly throughout the city.
So could you have an answer today, but could you tell me how many hour program would be allocated to those five rec centers in District 8?
I can get you that information.
Okay.
And Willis, I'd like to clarify that those 20 positions are part-time in the budget, not full-time.
They're part-time.
Part-time.
So part-time, how are they going to be divided with the five rec center district 8?
Okay.
Okay. Page 27, the two positions to strengthen minority and women-owned. Could someone explain that and how that's going to help?
Thank you, Councilmember Clayton. We are looking I'm sorry, Atkins. I'm so sorry.
Trading plays the win already. Working already, Clayton.
I apologize for that, Councilmember Atkins. We are looking to really strengthen, number one, we have launched our new diversity task force. And so that is a task force that will be meeting monthly. This gives us an opportunity to have staff support for that task force, which is a 25-member task force. But in addition to that, we're hoping to really build out subject matter expertise within the new Office of Business Diversity that will allow us to do more specific outreach as it relates to those procurements where we've traditionally had issues or we are limited in identifying and how we can help build the capacity of MWBEs. So this is just additional resources that are needed in the department that will help us expand our current program, expand our current services, and actually be able to get to the results that we know the council is seeking in this area.
Great. Thank you. Page 26, extending hours for libraries. Could someone explain to me, if you went from 5 to 6, why can you not go 5 to 7 like the Highland Hill Library? What was the qualification?
The recommendations, first of all, the extra hours are being allocated across the system so that now all the libraries that are currently 5 days are going to 6 days. If your question is why we didn't go to 7 days,
right, it's based, my question.
It is based on the usage. When you look at the ones that are 7 days, their circulation, their attendance, the attendance of programs, they're much higher than the ones that are currently 5 days moving to 6 days. So it's been an incremental process where we've gotten to this point where we're now recommending this Councilman, we continue watching our attendance participation to see what is the best way to allocate these resources.
Okay, so could you give me the data that stated that why did Highland Hills Library did not go to seven days?
Certainly. We've got the data for all of the libraries, and I'd be glad to provide that.
Thank you very much. Thank you, Mayor.
Thank you, Mr. Callahan.
Yeah, Mayor, very quickly, I think I'd like to go on record and join some of my other colleagues with this $60 million new revenue to try to have a slight reduction in the tax rate. You know, I think it was great to have a little bit of that reduction last year, and I think we can afford with this much revenue to have a very nominal decrease. I think it would be very wise. I don't really need a district office, as some others have mentioned, but, you know, I might consider doing a combo in Southeast Dallas with my other two colleagues, Atkins and Felder, you know, and share an office. That way we can have city access and so forth. We might also join up with our code officer, or actually our community prosecutor. She actually has an office in our Pleasant Grove Salvation Army, but that could be something, maybe some basic strategic forces, a code officer, our code supervisor would have an office to work out of. Police could come in there for a cup of coffee or a restroom break if need be in the field. And we could have materials and so forth. So it gets us a little bit closer to the people. However, I do have routine community offices every 2 months, and might even consider having those every month if the need or demand arises. So that's my take on that. I also think, TC, I don't know that anybody really mentioned this, but I think you've made some very solid personnel and staff additions to our city, and what I'm seeing is really refreshing. And thank you for bringing these new people on board. It's been a kind of a shot in the arm, some fresh blood, if you will. So thank you for that.
Thank you, Ms. Callahan. I concur with you on that last point. I think the caliber of people is excellent, and thank you, Mr. Broadnax, for doing that. I also love the theme. I think Mr. Callahan mentioned that as well in your second sentence, is service first, and making sure that we provide that excellent service should be our hallmark as a city, and we want to make sure that citizens feel the love from our city hall, and I see this budget focused on that, so well done. Let's start with revenue, because I think that's important. I will also join the crowd that says let's reduce effective tax rate this year. It is important to do symbolically. It's important to do pragmatically as we look at the future, and you'd never know exactly what's going on. So that should be our goal every year as we go into our budget process, that we become more efficient for our citizens in doing that. I also applaud you on looking at this on a two-year basis, because I think we start to see some insights. And so if you can put the slide up about our property tax increases revenue, the graph. There we go. Okay, you had it right there. You're saying 126.8 is 18-19, is that what that is? Okay.
Yes.
And that is at 7 point something
point
percent.
7.22.
How does that, is that made up between existing property and new property and new bills?
We're assuming 5% growth for reappraisal and our three-year average for new construction.
Okay. So that says a couple of things to me. One, thank you for assuming 5%, because I don't know what's going to happen in Austin, but this piece of legislation is real, and we should not be assuming it's not going to pass. And so we've got something that we've got to be thinking about next year, how we spend our money this year based on next year. The other thing it says is how important economic development is in driving new bills. Okay? This city has been built for the last 4 or 5 years, really, on our new bills in combination with property value. And so I think it's extremely important as we think about it that every time we sit around an economic development issue and we vote on stuff, that we're trying to drive the values up, not only of our homeowners, okay, which, by the way, we don't want to price our homeowners out, but really with those new bills. You didn't talk about our balance sheet, okay, and our long-term financial plan, but I've got to ask why you have decided that we need the fund balance strategy that we're at right now and for next year, but yet in the years out, you feel we need less fund balance. And maybe I just don't understand what you're doing there.
That's right. So you're looking at the five-year forecast.
Yes.
Where we've looked at, you know, going forward for the next 5 years, what would happen to fund balance. And in that kind of a forecast, because we have not made the decisions about kind of priorities and those expenses and how we might seek efficiencies, what we're essentially doing is just trending out those expenses and revenue. And yet we know that every year we're going to tweak things. We may end some things. We may find efficiencies. And so that really is a five-year forecast based on just sort of a trend line of the expense side of things. And so to be more clear in answering your question, it is not my intent to reduce fund balance. In fact, the Government Performance and Financial Management Committee will discuss that this month. We are going to be coming in with proposed changes to our financial management performance criteria. One of those will be on fund balance. And so what we have in terms of a challenge in the future years is we don't have a gap necessarily, because we could cover things with fund balance. But our intent, and Mr. Brodnax and I, will be that we're able to do everything while maintaining that fund balance. So we will be looking at things, making decisions.
So I should ignore fund balance, ending fund balance for 2021, and that was just some math gone wrong?
I don't know that it was math gone wrong. It just doesn't reflect the decision-making process. So that is essentially saying that
I'm really asking the question about what is the appropriate fund balance.
I mean,
$165 million is a lot of cash.
Yes.
Sitting on the books, okay? And to me, I'm probably a little bit more cash greedy on this stuff and not wanting to, I want it to go to work versus being sitting out there. So somebody said 131 is okay in 1920, according to this document, but it's not.
So in my professional opinion, I believe that we need 45 to 60 days of fund balance on the books. And just so you know, it's not all cash. We actually do invest that.
Okay, I'm fine. I'm fine with that. That's clear. It just was a curveball that you had a document that didn't show that.
Right.
Okay. The other thing that we spent a lot of time on this council for the last 2 or 3 years is headcount. Okay? We haven't talked headcount. That is a good metric to have, and we should be looking at our headcount 2 years ago, this last year, and next year, because headcount is where the costs start to balloon. And so if you can make sure next week when you present, if you could kind of show that summary.
Absolutely.
Of headcount. And I know we count heads different ways, and we got into that last year.
Right.
But I think it's an important thing to do apples to apples.
In every way we count it, we're down in the proposed budget.
Great. Good. I'd love to hear more about then I really believe housing is so important in the city from an economic development standpoint, so you're right on. I didn't hear a lot of things about some of the services and other retail and corporate and recruiting businesses in this plan, so I'll be listening to that next week about, you know, how we're going to approach that. Look, I'm thrilled about this because for the first time, we've got a budget that starts to reflect some priorities Mr. Clayton has been working on in regards to the Poverty Task Force, okay? And we're starting to put some meat on the bone on this issue. That's our biggest strategic issue we face as a city, but this gap between the haves and the have-nots, and we're doing some pragmatic things. The ESL program is excellent, and we're putting we're walking the talk, if you will, and we can take that to the community and kind of show it out. What is not included there, and I will apologize to Mr. Clayton because I voted against his proposal, I think it was last year or the year before last, about teenage pregnancy, okay? And I think this is a huge, huge issue facing the city of Dallas. And if we don't nip this in the bud, we are going to continue to have a spiraling hole that we'll never get out of. And so that's something that I will be putting an amendment in Mr. Thomas's committee about and how we approach that. So I'm concurring with everybody else. Mr. Kingston said you're treating us well, and I think that's right. I think we're getting the information. We're starting to see this stuff, and I think it's very, very healthy. So with that, let me remind you again of the process, a couple of you that were late. So today has been a good day. Next week we will look at the six strategic areas and delve into those things a little bit deeper. From that point forward, everybody should have enough information that they can make amendments, and they will make amendments through each of the committee chairs based on those strategic areas over that next two-week period. On the 30th, we will have a report from each of the committee chairs to say what they are hearing and what amendments need to be made. At that point, we come back as a group. We try to coalesce around those amendments, and in the next 2 weeks following that, finalize this. And I think this is a good process. So thank you for your attention. And with that, the meeting is adjourned.
Meeting adjourned at 12:19.